Hello and welcome to episode 167 of the Filmiac Podcast. I'm John.
I'm Kevin.
And I'm JR.
This week we're talking my pick, Alexander, which is the ultimate cut, I believe, is the cut we all watched from Oliver Stone. It's it's not the final cut, but it's his final cut. Get it?
For now.
The final one he did. He said he wouldn't revisit it. I don't know. We'll see. Maybe, I mean, it's the 20-year anniversary this year, so I figure...
It's almost over.
Right.
Right?
So...
Yeah.
It's not a beloved movie, obviously, so I doubt that we'll be seeing many more cuts of this thing going forward. But anyways, yeah, we're going to talk about Alexander and other stuff we watched, such as it is, and, well, how's it going? Been a minute?
Yeah, and
it's going good. I'm off for 4.5 days, so
yeah, 4.5 whole days. All right.
Yeah, doesn't happen very often.
Hey, and that's good. No, you got to take it where you can get it.
I do love the half in there.
Yes.
it's like, did you work a half day morning, or do you have to go back to work on a half day evening?
Well, I worked on Sunday, and when I work a Sunday, I only work from 9 to 1 on Wednesdays. So, since Thanksgiving happened to fall on the Thursday before my 3-day weekend, 4.5.
Nice.
Hell yeah.
Yep.
Well,
it is the day before Thanksgiving.
Yes. Mm. Yes.
Yeah. I'm sure you guys are all in the weeds cooking. Yeah. Yeah, no.
No, we.
Okay. I know
you guys hate food.
Oh, I forgot. You don't live near your parents though anymore. So I mean, like, my parents cook. I don't cook.
My parents don't cook anyway. But yeah.
No.
Not really. Yeah. My dad's like, I've cooked enough my entire life. I'll farm that shit out whenever I can. And my mom has never been a kitchen person. Doesn't like cooking at all.
I would cook. Nobody asked me to. So,
I'm sending you guys the dessert that I made for tomorrow that is currently chilling in the refrigerator. So it's Oreos, cream cheese, and powdered sugar, and made into. I'm gonna cut them up into bars. So
yeah, I would fuck this up hard.
You don't have to
cut into bars. So I'll take the whole thing.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, it sounds really good.
Yeah. And tomorrow I'm making burger sliders.
Nice.
Yeah. We ended up doing the bulk of the cooking last year for Christmas. So I think like my parents who we're going to see tomorrow are getting up there, so I think we're going to be taking on the mantle of cooking for most of the holidays.
Are you guys anti-turkey people?
Not really, but it's more like my dad used to fry a turkey every Christmas, but now it's like it's difficult for him to do that because he can't physically lift the turkey to get it in the oven or in the air fryer or what have you.
Yeah, frying a turkey is one of those things where if you don't have the proper form anymore, you should not do it.
Yeah. So, yeah, I was talking with a coworker just the other day, like, lots of these holiday foods, I don't know, I'm just kind of over them. Maybe I just didn't have the great things that most people have in the holidays or, just lesser versions of those. But at this point, I'm like, I don't really want a turkey. I'll take a, nice, like, big-ass fried turkey leg any day of the week. But, like, the rest of it, I don't know.
We haven't done turkey in a while. The last time we hosted Thanksgiving here... we got like the little Cornish hens, which is basically like a single serving, like whole bird,
right?
And fried those, and it takes a lot less time, and it's much more forgiving. Like it's harder to like overcook, fuck them up, or undercook. And yeah.
Nice.
Turkey's just kind of a, sometimes it just feels like more of a pain than it's worth. So,
I feel
alternative
that.
Proteins, I'm down with them.
Yeah. And apparently, like, you can get like a decent amount for cheap of these Cornish hens at Costco. So,
oh, hell yeah. They're, yeah. Even like getting them expensive at like Whole Foods, which the last time we did it, I got them at Whole Foods just because that was like the only place I could find them at that time. Mm. It was like, it still did not feel crazy. It's probably like $7 for a Cornish hen, which is not cheap, but it is not wild.
Yeah.
Cornish hens rule. You guys should get the Cornish hen at Barnes one time. It's fried Cornish hen on dirty rice. It's lovely. Lovely.
I'll remember that.
Yeah.
I'm good.
John hates. You hate my family's restaurants.
He only like
hate him.
Well, no, he only likes clean rice. Not dirty rice.
That's, you know, that's just fair. Dirty rice is
dad joke.
No, I don't dislike dirty rice. I don't know that I go to a restaurant and have it.
Mm. It's just like, it's one of the sides at Barnes.
It's like, it's like people who go to places and like buy, like people who go out and buy a sandwich. I don't understand buying a sandwich. Like, you could just make a sandwich at home. Like, I really don't get it. Even like fancy sandwiches. You can make a fancy sandwich at home. It's not that hard.
It's, I'm like, man, I'm with you in theory. there have been sandwiches like at places around me here where I'm like, I crave that sandwich and I'm going to go spend money on a sandwich that I know is stupid to spend money on. My pushback is like, I am like I will order burgers at restaurants, even though I also am very happy with the burgers that I can make on my grill or on the stove. Like I cook burgers pretty regularly, but I still will go get a fucking burger if I know the burger's good. And that's,
yeah. See, I don't, I can't,
stupid behavior.
I can't make a burger as good as a burger I like. So okay. Maybe I could if I like, you know, did some research or something. But I mean, sandwiches are just stupid. I'm also not one who craves a sandwich. Like, a sandwich is fucking like peasant food. I don't give a shit about a sandwich.
I was gonna say, like, I thought I remembered you saying just like sandwiches are 2 out of 5s every day of the week.
That's, you know, maybe I said that. I don't know.
I
agree with it.
I really think there was one episode where you were just like, sandwiches? Fuck sandwiches.
That's like my mom would always be like, hey, you guys should come over for lunch. We bought stuff for sandwiches. And I'm just like, what? Like, you bought stuff for sandwiches?
What shit
is that?
Look.
You invite me over to lunch so I can make a sandwich at your house? Like, I can make a sandwich at my house. Buy some food.
Sarah's, like, a great aunt and uncle came over a few months ago, and they were like, we'll get stuff for sandwiches.
Oh.
And I was like, okay. I mean, like, I feel like I have stuff for sandwiches. But they showed up with, like, is like, one loaf of bread. It's fucking, like, pumpernickel. I was like, what? Here's that. And, I mean, just people are eating, so it's like, it's just like pumpernickel. It's like bland turkey, and they didn't bring cheese. And I was like, okay, I guess I'll provide the cheese. Thank God I had cheese, because I always have cheese. But
no mustard, Jerry, Dijon.
And they didn't bring mustard. I had the mustard. They brought mayonnaise, which I didn't have. But also, it's like,
yeah,
you know, the sandwiches that need mayonnaise are just like dry sandwiches that weren't going to be good anyway.
Yeah, I mean.
I'm not a mayonnaise guy, though.
I'm not a mayonnaise or mustard guy.
Well, mustard's tight.
Ugh, mustard is disgusting.
Oh, man. Give me like a seedy, grainy mustard. Ugh, yeah.
Hey, you know what? That's just more for me and JR.
Yeah, well, when we all get together and have sandwiches, you guys can have the mustard. Yeah.
I mean,
well, that's... So, John, I guess, like, you don't go out to restaurants and buy, like, a $25, like, charcuterie board, which is the sandwich stuff without the bread.
Yeah, no. I don't.
I don't either.
You do that?
No, I don't.
$25 charcuterie board.
Charcuterie boards are a scam. And they will have delicious ingredients on them. I like meats and cheeses, and they often, you know, there's like jams or mustards. It's like, I like all those things except like little cornichons, but no, I'm not buying those. They're scams. I can put that together at home.
I'll eat off a charcuterie board at a party if somebody provides it. You know, but I will not have the jams and the cream cheeses and the wedges of, you know, soft cheese. I'm not into any of that shit. It's just not my thing. I don't know.
And now we're back to you guys. You just hate food.
I like hard cheese. I like sharp cheddars.
What about a medium cheddar? Is that too soft?
Medium cheddar just doesn't taste good enough. I like a sharp cheddar. I like a cheddar that like makes my lips pucker. It's so fucking sharp. You know, it's like my kid, my kid in her Halloween basket, she got toxic waste, which is like a candy that's super sour.
Yeah.
And I was like, she's not going to want this. I'll eat this. I like sour stuff. And I couldn't handle it. I had to spit it out. I was like about to start crying. I was like, this is too fucking sour. It was brutal, man. It was brutal.
Man.
All that warhead training when you were a kid.
I never even had a warhead. I'm like a Sour Patch Kid level guy. It's a little tiny bit of sour. You know, I thought I liked sour. But I don't.
So you had no idea what you were getting into.
Yeah, okay. No, not at all. Not at all. I love Sour Patch Kids. Delicious. I like the tiny bit of sour followed by just an immense rush of sweetness. You know.
Now we know what to get John for his birthday.
Yeah, send me Sour Patch Kids. No, that's not even my favorite. Anyway, let's get started, right?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Food yak.
All right, let's start talking about our deep dive here, which is boy, it's a heavy one this week. It's the 3.5 hour ultimate cut of Oliver Stone's Alexander. I believe this is our second Oliver Stone film.
I think so. Talk Radio was the first, I believe.
Right? We didn't do another one, did we?
I don't think so.
Not with me.
All right, cool.
We've talked about his movies separately, but like this is... Yeah, I think this is the second deep dive.
All right, so Alexander's originally from 2004. I think the ultimate cut's from like 2013 or something, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
13 or 14.
13 or 14.
Because I think on the Wikipedia...
Yeah, it might have been the 10-year anniversary, right?
Yeah.
But I think it was released in 13.
Oh, okay.
Oh, dumb.
That is dumb. Maybe it was the 10-year anniversary of, like, its festival dates or something. I don't know. Anyways, the point is that they asked him to do yet another cut. He had already done two cuts on this, the director's cut and the final cut. And then they made him go back and do the ultimate cut.
Just, like, imagine, like, you're Zack Snyder. Your movie's taken away from you, and you're like Stone's movie failed, and you guys have forced him to go back like 5 times and cut this behemoth piece of shit like 6 different ways. What's going on?
It's so true. It's so true. Yeah. This movie was not commercially or critically successful upon its box office run. Apparently. Quite successful in the DVD market afterward.
I totally believe this. I felt like this movie was just sold all over the place in my teenage years and into college, and was just like on like pay cable channels all the time. Like there, whatever studio owns this like had to make a killing from, you know, just back when you could make a killing from DVD and cable sales.
Yeah, and they were probably getting him to do more cuts so they could issue more DVDs and, you know, get their money back.
And was this movie rated R in its initial, like, phase?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. As I was like, I don't know. It's like, I don't remember. I have no memory of it. I'm pretty sure the version I've seen is the original theatrical cut, you know, around 2006, 2007. But I was like, I don't know if the boobies in this are added.
Oh, the boobies were there, bud.
At first. Yeah.
Let me tell you. I just remember I remember seeing this in the theater by myself and Rosario Dawson being quite nude. And the specifically, the only other thing I remember really well was the elephant trunk being cut off and the blood and everything. And then I went and saw, I hated it. And then Jonathan wanted to see it, so I went and saw it again with him, even though I hated it. But I was anything to go to the movies, you know, at the time. Yeah. And went to see it again, hated it again. He hated it. And then I didn't think about it again until many years later, when I had purchased a Blu-ray 3-pack featuring this movie, the final cut of this movie, Natural Born Killers and Any Given Sunday on Blu-ray at FYE. And I bought that because I wanted the director's cut of Natural Born Killers that was on that Blu-ray.
It's like, why are those the three together?
I know, right? It makes no sense. And I went home and promptly watched that director's cut of Natural Born Killers and, you know, loved it. And then I didn't look at this movie, the final cut of this movie, until COVID happened. And I was, you know, home for 5.5 months or whatever. And then I watched the final cut, and it really won me over. I liked it a lot. And I was like, wow, this must be way different than the original, or I've changed a lot. And then, you know, I was like, well, I got to watch this ultimate cut at some point, and this was the opportunity to watch the ultimate cut. And so I did.
Without necessarily going into the specifics, like, were you able to track differences between those cuts?
The
ultimate cut is actually shorter than the final one, right?
Yeah, so apparently with the final cut, he said he used every single piece of footage they shot, and he was like, everything's in there.
Which is not how you would make a movie, but okay.
Yeah, but again, I liked the final cut when I watched it. So this one, he apparently said, like, okay, that was a mistake. I put too much in. So he went back and took out, what is like 7 or 14 minutes or something like that, out of the final cut to do this. And I do not see a difference. I don't remember, except that the only difference I notice is my reaction to the film, in that I did not like this time. So something must have changed, or maybe I was just in a really good mood when I watched the final cut or something. I don't know. I almost, if I had had time, I would have gone back and watched the final cut again. But I just did not have any time to do that. And but I actually kind of wanted to, even though this was kind of a chore to get through.
I have overarching structure questions about the movie, and I'm curious how the structure has changed in the cuts, if it's changed at all. Because I was, you know, it starts with like the deathbed scene, and then it goes to Anthony Hopkins talking, and we're just kind of tracking Anthony Hopkins around a beautiful garden, and you're like, Anthony, who the fuck are you talking to? What's going on? And then we see he's, you know, someone's taking his dictation. This is like an autobiography or whatever. And then we go to the battle with the Persians. And I was thinking, like, is there a cut of this where the battle of the Persians is just how this starts?
Okay.
Because that also is like that. Having watched, rewatched the first Gladiator a few days after this, I'm like, I just get a sense that Alexander was basically greenlit because of Gladiator. And,
absolutely.
And starting with that battle with the Persians is very much, you know, starting with the battle in Germania. Like, we're kicking this off full, you know, swords and sandals style with the action.
Now that you say that, okay, there are two more things that I remember. I meant to say this earlier. One is that I know in the theatrical cut, it's linear. It starts with his childhood up through him growing up to be like a young man, Philip getting killed.
That actually sounds gross.
Yeah. And then I remember that specifically. And I remember that being one of the great things about the final cut, is that it does start with the battle. And I don't know that it doesn't have Ptolemy, the Anthony Hopkins character at the beginning. It might have that still, 'cause he definitely narrates it. But, there is a scene in the final cut that is not in the ultimate cut, which is all the soldiers in a tent prior to the battle with the Persians, and they're discussing the plan of battle. And I'll be honest, I did miss that scene. I wanted that scene to be in there.
And that's even more Gladiator. Gladiator's not a scene in the tent, but like we have conversations.
Yes.
You know, between Russell Crowe and the commanders, and a little bit of logistics talk.
The range is fine.
Yeah. Yeah, there's I don't remember the exact line, but there's very much of like a like when I give the signal, like give them hell kind
Unleash
of deal.
Hell.
Yeah, thank you. That this battle is missing. I feel like it just kind of jumps right in, and I love in these battles in this movie. I didn't love. it's like labeling like a Macedonian left, Macedonian right, the center, and I'm like, well, I don't really know what these mean. I don't know what's going on. I understand that there's like this giant field of battle, and this is literally the center, the left and the right.
But isn't
that happening?
Isn't that a cool idea, though? I agree with you. It it does not help at all. But it's such a cool idea to just give you an idea of the grandeur and size of this battle. It's so big, we have to cut to different parts of it as it's happening.
But each place that they cut to is just like it's a violent dust cloud.
Yes.
And
I agree. I mean, it doesn't help me understand the action anymore, but it is a cool idea. And I think, you know, it could be done in a way that would be more
interesting. When they do it again in India, it's... Maybe I've just like got a better rhythm with the whole film by that point, but I feel like it was more effective. And at that point also, you know who the different characters are and they're divided up. I feel like it worked a little bit better, even though like that battle was not nearly as like sprawling.
Yeah, it feels very like way tighter.
Yeah.
Like they're in one location.
And
the
they're,
entire time.
You know, and they're, I think like the woods make it feel, you can't do the giant, like long shots, the helicopter shots in the woods. Cause you just see trees.
True.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys have seen woods.
I have a few times. I mean, Kevin, what were your initial reaction?
It's entirely too fucking long. that was my initial reaction.
I was trying very hard to not lead with that, but
I mean,
one
I
of us
know.
Had to.
Well, yeah. I mean, apart from that, like, I think it looks beautiful, but I don't know. Like, I just didn't get any kind of like. I see that everybody's trying really hard in this, but like it doesn't feel like anybody's really getting there. Do y'all know what I mean?
As like, far as the acting performances?
Yeah, well, the acting, the story, like I was really like distracted by the fact that it time jumps so much. I honestly would have preferred a linear, you know, beginning to end instead of just, you know, you know, this happened and then this happened and then this happened and then, you know, oh, we're going back back and forth.
Kevin, I think John said this while you were got up, but
probably.
Oliver Stone does have a treat for you if that's what you want. Because it exists. Apparently that was the first version of the movie. It's fully linear.
Okay, well...
So you can check that one out. It's much shorter too. It's only 2.5 hours or something.
I'm into that. Yeah. yeah, and like I had read too on like on Wikipedia, like apparently a bunch of like historians were like, yeah, they got this like as accurate as possible, but then they just left this to the wayside. And like I don't know anything about like, you know, the history apart from what I read on like, you know, Alexander the Great's Wikipedia page, but like when Val Kilmer is like showing him like all the cave drawings and he's like, you know, and here brave Heracles, even after his 12 labors, was rewarded with the death of his children. It's like, no, he did the 12 labors to atone for the killing of his children. I have to say, like, that's kind of Oliver Stone's like
no
view of the world.
These like, stupid Macedonians, they're fucking up the stories already, you know.
Apparently, you know.
It's like two generations in. Can I make a Val Kilmer comment real quick?
Go ahead.
Val Kilmer, who plays Alexander's father, whose name you just said and I can't remember it.
Philip.
Philip.
Thank you. These are historical figures. I learned about them in sixth grade, and then a bunch of times after that. All you learn about in school is Greece and Rome. I found Val Kilmer as Philip to be, like, above and beyond, like, the most entertaining performance in this film. I loved it. Also, simultaneously, I'm not sure how this works. It took me a few tries to watch this because every time we would jump in time to Philip, I would just instantly fall asleep. It's like, Val Kilmer is so good, but like the, like, there's just something about like his like family stuff and like the politics in Greece at the time are just like, I'm out. I'm literally,
it's not Kilmer. It's Jolie. No. It's Jolie. Well, she's the worst. Come on, if you're praising Kilmer's performance, you have to be decrying Jolie's. Like,
oh no, I can't stand it. And
hers
and
is ridiculous.
It's such terrible. A bummer that it's like she's you know, like a capital A actor, like, or like I think she thinks of herself that way, and so I'm guessing that the specific accent was her idea. I did not look that up. If I'm wrong, please tell me. But
the only thing I read about her performance was that they wanted her to wear period appropriate garb, which would have covered her entirely. And she was like, no, I need to be wearing very little to accentuate the fact that my sexuality is my weapon.
Sure. I believe it.
You know,
yeah. There's just,
which
I don't
is
know.
Whatever. I don't
it's a bummer that she's the only person trying to pull off an accent. But like the character sucks. It's a dud, and I'm guessing like if we get the linear version of this, and the first hour is devoted to Angelina Jolie, and that makes sense because in my mind Angelina Jolie was like a much bigger part of this movie than she is in the ultimate cut. It's like that's just a huge bummer.
I would say she's still a big part, and
she's a big part, and she dominates those scenes even when Doc Gilmer's there being awesome.
Bro, the scenes with her, where it's just her and Alexander, if they feel like they're 37 minutes long, each one of them, they go on forever. Like she's just the writing for her character. Okay, look, the writing for this whole movie.
What do you
has
think
the
snakes mean?
Has a lot of problems, but like just some of the shit that people say in this movie, it's like uber cliched and just like to the point of absolute meaninglessness. Like when she says she's writing that letter to him at the beginning when he gets to Babylon, and she's like, she's dictating it to her servant or whatever, and she's telling him about all of his friends, and she's going but like one to another, and then she goes, "Beware of Ptolemy, men who think too much, they blind themselves." And I was like, "What does that even mean? You think too much, you blind yourself. Like, what is that? What the fuck does that mean?"
And it's also like, why include that line when you're never going to make Ptolemy
exactly
a real character?
Right.
Like,
he's literally just there to witness. He's there to witness things, and so that you can say, "Oh, that's Anthony Hopkins." At the end of the movie,
they don't even get into how he stole Alexander's body as a way to like claim Egypt after his death,
or that he might have been complicit in the poisoning.
Yeah. All kinds of stuff. They don't. Yeah, it's like they're like, I've got this line that might reference history, but I forgot to do anything with it.
Yeah, it's a mess. And like,
it is a mess.
Yeah,
I think. But I so badly want to watch. I wish I had watched Final Cut because I feel like there's a good movie here to be. You can mine a good movie from this. Like there are really good scenes in this, to me anyway. I thought there was like really powerful stuff in here. It's just surrounded by like a lot of like cheese and like really poorly written stuff. Anytime Alexander's making a speech, like this sort of obligation of a historical battle epic is that, you know, you got to have like ever since Braveheart, right? You got to have the guy riding a horse and making a speech. And I swear to God, he does it like six times in this movie. It's ridiculous, you know? And it's just like, the things that he's saying are just platitudes, you know, like we're going to live like heroes and it's going to be full of honor and blah, blah, blah. It's just like, he's not saying anything that means anything. Well, at least in Braveheart, William Wallace's is a, like, there's a really, I don't know, the writing of that scene when he's riding his horse up and down the line and yelling at his compatriots and telling them to fight, like getting them roused up to fight, at least it makes sense. At least it's like you could, there's an arc to that moment, right? Like they don't want to fight, and then he talks them into it in a very real logical way. Here it's just like they're all ready to fight and he's just riding along, be like, I'm Alexander, let's go further than my father ever did.
Yeah, but they cut to, you know, like in the Persian battle, he's doing that speech, but they're cutting to King, is it Darius?
Darius.
Darius. King Darius III, they're like cutting to him as though like
he can hear.
He's like silently reacting
to
the speech. You know, I'm going to use an old, a full league away, right? As though he can hear.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, get real though. It's like Alexander's yelling at 2,000 guys on horseback. They can hear him. Give me a fucking break.
No.
Yeah.
And he's going back and forth on the horse. Like whatever 6 guys are in front of the horse as he says a word. Those are the people that can hear that word.
Right? Yeah.
Even then, the horse gallop is probably drowning out what he's saying.
Yeah.
It's like, and it's like at the going back. He does the same thing at the end. At the end when he's in battle in the forest. He's like riding at a full gallop, screaming. I was just like, nobody could hear this guy. This is ridiculous. No. Elephants are wailing in the. It's like, there's no way anyone can hear this man.
And I don't hold the speech on moving horse to 2,000 men against this movie. That is just a trope. That's fine.
Yeah.
But it would definitely be better if what he was saying was anything. And that's like, that might be like a huge sin of this movie. Is just like. Making Alexander just so like boring and nothing. I know that this was a thing, like we make like a historical figure into some sort of like quirk, you know, like Napoleon is turning him into like a weird sex dude, Ridley Scott, Napoleon with Joaquin Phoenix, right? I know that was more recent than this, but you know, it's, I get like Oliver Stone's doing like some psychoanalysis of Alexander making him this, this mama's boy, but it's just like so little feels like, there.
Yeah. It feels like he's trying to do that because he feels like, oh, this is going to be great. This is going to be like a really interesting take on it that his mother is controlling him like Lady Macbeth or something. And that like, you know, he's got this, he's torn between his father and his mother and et cetera, et cetera. But it's so clumsily executed. And I have no, I feel like it's never explained clearly his ambition, like why he wants to keep pushing all the way to the end of the world. He always just says like, I just want to do this because like, we want to go further than my father went. And he's just like, why though? Like, give me a reason. And I keep,
it's like,
keep, go ahead.
Well, like, you know, not to jump on the history horse again, but like, In the preamble of, you know, his Wikipedia article, it's like Alexander legitimately changed the world and like made civilization kind of what it is today. And like, you know, like, you know, he was undefeated in battle, which I think, you know, is somehow underplayed in this movie where like all these epic battles are being fought. And, you know, like. Yeah, like they give him. I don't. It's there, but it doesn't mean anything. Like when they're giving him crap about like having like the Persians like, you know, kiss him and like kneel to him, like that was part of their culture. That was how they greeted, you know, higher ups. Like, you know, tiny little things that could have been easily explained, and then like, you know. All, you know, like the Silk Road, you know, trade and, you know, cultural this, that, and the other, like, but at the end, it's just like, oh no, he was, you know, it's just at the end, it's just Anthony Hopkins going, flew too close to the sun on wings of pastrami.
Pastrami. to John's point, I kind of in also referencing history in the sense that we all read the Wikipedia page, Alexander. You know, there's that quote attributed to him that's like, you know, does it even pop up at the end of the movie? Like, he wept because there were no more worlds to conquer or whatever. No more lands to conquer. Like, that's like one of the famous Alexander quotes, is that, like, he got to the end of civilization in India and then wept because he'd just, like, done it. It's almost like Oliver Stone just, like, took that idea. I'm just like, well, he has to get that far because he got that far. Right. And I won't analyze why he wanted to get that far. I just know that it was important to him. And then,
even if they played it like the most cliche way possible, which would be like for his father's approval, right? Which they try to get into a little bit. Like he constantly sees like his father's ghost like staring at him.
And that's the whole like colitis thing. Which in India, that my reaction to everything that happened with colitis was like, why would I care about this? And like that's also where the movie tries to deal with, like, you know, his generals and troops having all sort of negative feelings about how he is like trying to adopt Persian customs and stuff. So like basically more integrate Persian society. Like he wants to conquer and control all these lands, so he's trying to adapt. It's a very, you know, Catholic Church idea of doing that. Conquer, kill, and then like pretend like, you know, we always had these customs. And again, like the movie barely deals with that, but then like out of nowhere colitis is like so goddamn mad and bringing up all the stuff he does and what he's wearing and his father, and it's like, this is a lot after no build-up.
There was build-up. There was the line with the local water putrid. We drank the strong wine. So they're just hammered, man. They, you know.
Yeah. But like the structural stuff gets like really wonky when, like, you know, he's accusing him and, you know, he's seeing his father's ghost and then he runs a spear through him. And then, you know, like 10 minutes later, hey, Alexander, this is colitis. He's my best friend. You know?
No, yeah, it's terrible.
He's the guy you want. He's the guy you want by your side.
Right.
And like,
I have a note about that. Like I said, we should have shown Philip's death before the colitis death scene. Like, it makes no sense to have it afterwards. And, no. but I have to say that, while I agree that the colitis death scene is not earned at all, like it's just like, it's like getting into this, what you would imagine an Oliver Stone Alexander movie would be, is be about Alexander becoming like drunk with power and then like paranoid about that power being taken away. But it's all encapsulated in that one scene. And like that sort of thing doesn't really happen outside of that scene. But I do think that scene is, it works for me in a vacuum. Like, I like that scene a lot, and I like how it's acted. I like how it's written. And I like that fact that he sees his father screaming at him as like colitis becomes his father. That works way better than when he sees his father randomly after he, you know, I don't even know when it is. After he conquers somebody, he like sees him clapping for him or something. I'm just like, does he hate his father? Like, what are we talking about? What's going on?
I might be with you on that. Like, just, I like the staging of this sort of this party, this Bacchanal type deal. I like that, like the fight starts as like jabs. It, like, it's very sort of like Shakespearean. We're insulting each other without being too open about it, and then like that builds. Like, I understand that in scene tension. I just thought within like the grander scope of the movie, it was like, this is so much all at once.
Yes, I agree. Like, it should, that feels like it should be the culmination. Hold
me back. It's a lot of hold me back.
It should be like the culmination of like 45 solid minutes of build up about him being paranoid about them turning on him or the mutinies and everything happening. You know, I mean, there's lots of like his army wanting to mutiny. I mean, like, I like the other scene of that too, early, like really early in the film where they're in that little room with like the big table. Do you guys remember?
They're all
sort of like questioning his motives at that point. And that's
the wedding, right? Like right before the wedding or right after the wedding.
Yeah. It is. It's after, I think it's after. sure. Anyway, it doesn't matter. The point is that, yeah, it's during the wedding. They're in Babylon. And then he, like, there's a scene, there's a shot in there, too, which is always, like, the best shot in the movie, where he pushes, it might be Clytus. I don't know who he's pushing against the wall. And he's, like, face-to-face with him. And the fucking close-up is so fucking tight, and the light is, like, hitting him in this weird way. It's, like, the streak of light.
Isn't it? I think it might be, like, Rhys Meyers. Is it?
Yeah, it is Rhys Meyers.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like the one fucking time Rhys Meyers got a line.
Yeah.
By the way, I feel like Rhys Meyers got like totally malloced in this film. Like the amount of like close-ups he gets, and just like we're picking him out of a crowd specifically, but he's got one line, and I don't know who he is or why he's there. He's definitely
Cassander.
Like
Cassander. His name is Cassander.
He's Adrian. Yeah, Cassander. Yeah. According to the Wikipedia, he's a big deal. He's like one of the I think like Ptolemy's sons when they were passed over for rule in Egypt, like went back to Macedonia because Cassander was there or whatever. Mm. Like he ruled a region after this. But that dude got Adrian Brody'd in Thin Red Line. Like
he had a couple of lines. I mean, he was more than Adrian Brody, I feel like. But I mean,
he's just there.
They cut to him like giving weird looks and stares at Alexander.
No, this movie is why he had to like go do the fucking Vampire Diaries after this. Like you're out of movies, man.
Didn't he try to commit suicide at one point?
Did he?
In the movie or the actor?
No, the actor, Rhys Meyers.
Oh, I did not know that, and I'm sorry for joking so much about his career.
It was after this, I believe he, because I remember, I want to say he came back with that. With Paris with Love or whatever, that John Travolta action movie.
Hmm.
Huh. Like his
But he was in The Tudors? Was that before or after this?
That would have been right after, right?
Okay, so...
Or actually,
The Tudors was kind of a big deal?
Oh, it says... Look at this now, 2011. Okay, it says he's hospitalized after suicide attempt, but then the Hollywood Reporter says he did not attempt suicide, says source. It was not a suicide attempt, it was a relapse, and he was hospitalized. I don't know. I just remember reading that he had tried to...
Drugs were involved. Bummer.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, sounds like a bummer regardless.
Sure.
Sucks, but, you know, also, sorry, Rhys Meyers, because you were edited out of this film.
Maybe that's what led to his substance abuse issues, is that he was ready to be in this movie and become a big star, but then this movie tanked and he was barely in it. Maybe he's in a lot in the theatrical cut, though. You never know.
Maybe.
He had Matchpoint the next year. That was a big deal. He's all over Matchpoint.
He's good in that.
Matchpoint.
Yeah. How do you guys feel about the battles themselves? I mean, there's only two battles in this movie, which is sort of insane because Alexander's like known for being a guy who gets in a lot of battles.
Well, they kind of
like they still study him at West Point today.
And they kind of cut the action like you know, like the sort of like a Darius death, like chase and death is just like that's just montage. That's done. Mm-hmm. You know, like cutting off the army on the way to Babylon. That's whatever. Not a battle. And
right.
Strange, but again, the I already said the violent dust clouds. The battle with the Persian army is like that wasn't bad. I was just disoriented. I think you wanted me to be disoriented with some labels. It was fine. And there was some stuff before it that was okay. Kratos, the big guy.
Okay.
The hound in the Game of Thrones.
Yes.
He said, "I am known to sleep with my eyes open as a baby's arse." That's something that he said right before a battle. What does that line mean? I'm known to sleep with my eyes open as a baby's arse.
Who are we talking about?
The general, Kratos. He's the giant guy. He's in the whole damn movie.
Is he?
Yeah.
Is he the guy who tries to mutiny against him later in the film?
No. He's vocal about wanting to go home. He doesn't.
That's what I mean. Not mutiny. Whatever. Yeah. Well, no. But there are mutineers. He crucifies a bunch of mutineers, right?
Yes.
After that. Yeah.
Yeah. Like he's like, you know, I've fought and gone through every hardship with you, and this guy is the guy who's like, and we love you for it,
right?
But
yeah, right.
Yeah, and Again, he's
oh yeah,
giant.
And like
he's
his son like, gets bitten by the six, snake seven. And like
yeah.
Oh, okay.
He like he's got this he's got the bonfire talk with his is that his son at the beginning of the movie, and then we see his son die 2 hours later, and we're supposed to remember that they're related. And
that all happened in 5 minutes of each other.
He has the contingent of the army in the elephant battle that is being overtaken, and it's like Alexander's charging to like help them, like his little section when he's shot. Anyway, really just going to say that there's some good lines around these battles, good stupid lines that people say, and the India battle is violent as fuck.
I thought they were both pretty violent, and I liked that about them. And I think those two battle sequences are as good as anything that you would see in a Ridley Scott epic like this, or in Braveheart, or anything like that. I think they're quite good.
Those never saw Kingdom of Heaven, which I feel like would be my closest point of reference. The one battle at the beginning of Gladiator is good. And
yes, I agree.
You're right. Like this is to that.
I think
level.
This is equally good as that. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. That, and having just watched that last night, and to compare. I mean, if anything, I might say, just by virtue of the fact that I like Braveheart as a film better, I might prefer those scenes. But and they are clearer of what's going on. They're edited maybe better. But I enjoyed the battles, and I just wanted more of them. I don't see any reason to limit yourself to two battles. The great thing about, I was going to say this about about Gladiator, even watching the first 45 minutes, that Gladiator is, it's really smart what it's doing. Okay. This, the first Gladiator.
Taking a full hour to start.
No. Gladiator is an action film that masquerades as a prestige drama. It's just a big action movie. There's a lot of action in this movie. There's a lot of violence, like really graphic violence, and it starts with graphic violence. It ends with graphic. I mean, it leads up to like a boss battle at the end, which is quite violent. I mean, it pretends like it's something different, but that's really what it is.
So I don't even know that it's pretending. I feel like it just like got a reputation for it. Because people liked it so much and it won Best Picture.
Right. And actor.
Thank you. we just kind of ended up as like, it's this prestige thing. We're like watching it. Yeah. It doesn't feel like it's trying to hide what it is because it spends so little. Never mind. We'll get to Gladiator.
I think that if you're
not interested in anything that isn't the action.
I think if you watch the second film, there's a definite difference. Between, like, you would, the first film is like Citizen Kane prestige level by comparison to the second film, okay? And I don't mean that it's, like, that much better. It is better. It's just, it's a much more, like, mannered film. Like, this movie is, like, part two is trashy. Now, it's not trash, but it's trashy. You know what I mean?
It's all, I wish Ruby could, like, figure himself out.
Yeah, it's nothing like the Last Duel, which was so smart and amazing. And
it
like
was really
good.
It's the Last Duel is just, we just have to accept that the Last Duel was like the last good one.
Until Gladiator 3 comes out and then he'll redeem himself.
It's just the last, and, you know, like I didn't think much was good leading up to the Last Duel from Ridley, but
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
I was ready
it gave me hope.
Cash in on him.
That hope was stupid.
So, okay, this is like a big problem that I have with the movie. And I don't know how you guys felt about it, but Vangelis's score, I thought was like pretty, like 90% garbage, like really saccharine, over the top, hopeful, cheesy sounding.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. I totally agree, and I basically did a thing where it annoyed me so much in the beginning of the film that I basically shut it out. Like I mentally
I
was
couldn't
just kind of ignoring it.
Yeah,
the rest of the way.
Because anytime there was like a moment where I'm like, "Oh, this is a great like this moment should be working for me on an emotional level, and it doesn't because this god awful music is happening over it.
I like the scene where he's like charging the elephant, and Bucephalus, the horse.
Okay, yeah.
Was it just Bucephalus?
Bucephalus. Anyway, when he's charging and then the horse dies, I remember specifically thinking of what you were talking about, like, really, really big emotional scene, but then
undercuts
like,
it entirely.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Just, you know.
And I will say that moment in particular,
so many arrows in that horse.
Yeah. That moment in particular is a moment where I thought the writing was good, like the callback there. Because I like the moment where he tames the horse. I hate the kid actor in his performance. But when he tames that horse and he says, "You're afraid of your shadow," and he's like, "That's just our shadow," and they cut to the shadow, I was like, that's an interesting way to have this kid, you know, be smarter than all of the other horse trainers there for some reason, you know?
Yeah. And the other trainers didn't know that the horse spoke English.
Right. Greek. Ancient Greek. You know our tongue. You know, they always talk about, like, they're both speaking English, but they somehow are like, you know my language. No, but I like the callback at the end where he mentions the shadow thing again. He's like, you know, you don't have to be afraid anymore. And while they're charging, because all the horses were afraid to charge the elephants. I thought that was pretty...
Which makes sense.
And I will say, I don't know how you guys felt about this. This classic Oliver Stone, I love the cut to like red infrared or whatever that is. I'm way into it, dude.
My note for that says, I hate this red bleached out effect once Alexander is shot.
I love it, dude. I thought it was so good. It was like, I was like, finally, this movie has like style, man. At least he's trying to do something, you know? Like, at least something is happening that's not like any other period epic that we've ever seen. Okay. It would never do that, you know?
Why did we wait till 2 hours, 20 minutes in, and like,
it's a serious moment, dude. He's dying now.
A little too late, and it's also ugly as fuck. And, like, ugly as fuck would be fine if you had inserted any other sort of, like, off-kilter style into this anywhere else. But that did not work for me in that moment.
Fair enough.
Even though I get why it happened. I just wish it was better, and I wish he'd done something more daring more. I don't know.
I agree with that. I mean, I'm not saying I wish I don't. I definitely would love it if he would experiment more and be even like weirder more often. But I will say, like, that's a, like, there's another moment at the beginning of that battle where he just has like a random iris shot. Like the battle starts with an iris opening. Like, we never have an iris throughout the rest of the film, you know?
Yeah.
And that's like a weird, like almost like Star Wars Kurosawa way to begin this battle scene. You know, which I thought that I'm like, hey, that's interesting. True. At least that's something true. Is happening. You know, like I wrote Irish shot out of nowhere.
Like, I didn't clock that. He tried something. You're right.
Mm.
Go ahead.
Shoot, like, I have like two major things we haven't really talked about, and I feel like we should talk about just Colin Farrell of it all. You know. How is he? How much is his fault? How much is the wig's fault?
I think the wig actually helps. I have a note that you don't need the subtitles to tell you where you're at. You can just track it by his mullet length. Like, if his mullet is shorter, it's earlier in the film.
And one of my notes was like, you know, the long shitty blonde wig is like way better than like the really short shitty blonde wig. For some reason, like that short hair, it was driving me crazy.
The short hair definitely looks more like a wig than the long hair.
I mean,
they
all look like wigs. And I don't... Oh. I'm okay with them being wigs. It's just... they just look so absurd. But, you know, it's like, was Colin Farrell not ready for this moment?
Colin Farrell said in the Hollywood Roundtable thing that he did... was that when Batman came out? I don't even know. He was on one of the Hollywood Roundtables.
Do you think it was
Banshees? Yeah, Inisherin. And he said that he had said that he like pinpointed the moment when he like redefined his career with this movie. He said my head got too big and I thought I was like, you know, the best and that I needed like a attitude adjustment and this movie did it because it tanked and everything and it's terrible and and he said I'm not good in it and you know all this kind of stuff like this. So I think he feels like he was miscast. I think Colin Farrell's a good actor. I think he's definitely, it's like what Kevin said, you know, he's trying really fucking hard in this movie, but I also feel like, again, there's a performance there that you could probably edit around and get something good out of. It's just the fact maybe that we're seeing like almost every single line that he says. And a lot of it is just like really over dramatic and, him screaming at his mother or, you know, screaming at his father or screaming at him on horseback and, you know, screaming at Clitus. Yeah. It's just like, I don't know. There's not a lot of nuance to his performance. And again, there's not a lot of context to his behavior or why he acts the way he does, why he's in love with Hephaestion throughout the entire film, but
is he
refuses to fuck him for some reason, only wants to fuck the Persian guy and other men, but won't have sex with Hephaestion, who he apparently claims to love. You know, there's this big moment when Hephaestion dies where he's crying in there, and you know he's not actually crying. That's another problem, I should say. He's pretending to cry. There's no tears. Yeah. I mean,
it's like a drama tension for drama's sake kind of deal. Like that never made any sense to me.
And I think it's like like Oliver Stone like pointed out that, you know, there was like, you know, homophobia around and how like that like detracted from what people thought of the movie. I don't know. Could be.
In the original film, though, none of that's there, right? Like, I mean, all the Hephaestion stuff is there because he never does anything with Hephaestion. But like him, as far as I recall, I remember thinking like this movie is tame as fuck as far as that goes, because it doesn't show him, you know, making out with the Persian slave like it does in this cut, or Philip raping the boy at the party, the Dionysus party or whatever in the flashback. You know,
that was rough. Yeah.
Yeah. Although now I think about it, maybe it did show that, because in this cut, that's a reason why Philip gets assassinated. Yes. Right.
I mean, the reason. It maybe is the reason.
Maybe that's also
there's no other reason.
It's hard to say. I mean, I have to watch the theatrical cut again, which I'm not willing to do.
I do wonder if Colin Farrell was told, you know, don't really cry, because it's a lot of eye makeup we'd have to redo.
He couldn't muster it.
My chemical Alex that we got going on with him and Jared Leto. This is like, this inspired Jared Leto's fashion choices for Jeff.
It's so true. Talk about, I mean, Jared Leto is, I feel like, somebody who is barely in this movie. Like, Hephaestion as a character, he's in a few scenes, but he does nothing.
Yeah, agreed. Like, it's like we don't get, like, a full picture of anyone. Like, they're either like a friend who is a general, but like we never see them in battle, or they're just like a general who is there and is part of the battle. You know, like the only time like these people come together in any sort of like political sense is that scene you referenced earlier, or like around the table. Like that's the only like meeting of the generals we get, where these people like actually get to speak. You know, Leto, we used to see him be like his friend, and they clearly long for each other, and there's no reason why they aren't together.
Right. Everybody knows he's fucking guys. Nobody seems to give a shit about it, except for the fact that he's fucking Persian guys, I guess. I mean, even Aristotle, Christopher Plummer, mentions... like,
that was crazy.
Christopher Plummer is like a horrible, like racist, xenophobic person as Aristotle, but he's not homophobic. He's like, men have to love each other in many ways. You know, it's like that's totally okay. You know, but he's Greeks are the best, and everybody else is a barbarian. You know,
yeah. Which like I could be wrong. I'm not an expert on Aristotle, but I don't think he, a guy that smart, I don't know that he really thought that way. But that's, again, that's Oliver
Stone. Hard to say.
That's true.
Thousands of years.
I've got some...
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you know, like, yeah, like, people do make, you know, a much bigger deal about, like, but yeah, like, Heracles, like, when he's, you know, Hercules, like, was bisexual. Like, it's in all the myths. Like, that's the reason that, like, in the
not
middle
the American
of
ones.
Well, of course not.
Not Kevin Sorbo's Hercules.
Definitely not. But yeah, so, like, yeah. I don't know. There's just... Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's also a tendency to make ancient peoples, like, make them seem so much less worldly and, frankly, dumber than they were.
It's like shorthand. Well, it's like they don't have the technology we have, which means they must be dumb and stupid and ignorant of everything and ignorant of the world. And they didn't understand science, so they're ignorant. You know?
Yeah, that's why aliens were the ones who built the pyramids in Egypt.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, right. Yeah. I mean, it was a long, like, film and just story history of sort of equating with or at least heavily identifying, you know, Greek and Roman civilizations and armies as, like, the de facto just, like, empower white people, regardless of what their, you know, race and skin color might have been. And that's, you know, it's like, that's why we learn about them in history so much more than everyone else. Like, they are they're the white people of history.
Mm-hmm.
Totally different subject, I know.
How'd you guys feel about, continuing with the Colin Farrell stuff, I mean, how do you guys feel about the Irish accents? You know, that Oliver Stone forced all the other actors, or he cast Irish actors, and then he forced, Kilmer to adopt the Irish accent also, so that his accent wouldn't be out of place.
It seems silly and unnecessary, and like so much of this movie.
I feel like Kilmer's accent is way more distracting than Colin Farrell's, to be honest. I mean, like, only because I know Kilmer doesn't have one, you know? So, like,
yeah. I didn't mind Farrell's accent, and I didn't mind that there were different or varying accents. Kilmer's was silly. Angelina Jolie's was, like, bad. And the rest was just kind of whatever. My problem was not the accents for the rest of the characters.
Go ahead.
Rosario Dawson.
I have one note. She is hot. That's all.
Oh, she's a goddess. But there's a lot around her that is like, it's rough. We like Alexander is like, he is worldly, but he does not like ever stop being Greek or Macedon. You know, he's like, through our union, Greek and barbarian. It's like, yeah. Refer to these people as Persians. And then it's like, Alexander like goes through like this whole stuff with his, I'm going to call him his cabinet now. But like the history and traditions of the Asians, like these Persians, and how like their society is older than theirs. And then we go into the bedroom where they basically turn Rosario Dawson into like, they ask her to like go like full primitive native in the way that she's like fighting and attacking. And I'm not saying that she shouldn't like fight and resist a thing that she does not want, but just like the way that they have her silently kind of like she fights as though she is an animal.
He does too, though. Is that him mocking her?
I feel like he's adopting,
or is he into it? Like
he's adopting or adapting to the game,
right?
I just thought that was like, that was icky, and maybe it's true to history. Who knows? But
maybe it's also so maybe good. Icky because it feels like she's being
exploited
because she's completely nude during that scene. and you know, she's fighting off a rape essentially, and being asked to perform as though she's an animal, like you say,
and like, you know, many other such close to rape scenes throughout film history. By the end of it, she's way into it.
Of course, yeah, because that's all it took was his sexy body, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he just had to win.
And I think, yeah, I agree. And I think that she's also completely underutilized. And I mean, what does she have, like 10 lines in the whole movie? I mean, she barely says anything. And
she's just there. She's reacting to him doing things, just like looking at stuff. She somehow gets to Babylon ahead of the army. The army like travels through the desert back from India. She's there with them, and all of a sudden, she's on like the walls of Babylon watching the army come through. It's like, what? How did that happen?
They wrote it. They wrote ahead. yeah, I mean, I would have liked to, like, she has no, she's like zero influence on anything he does, which is weird. Like, you'd think like there would be scenes of her, like him, maybe not actively getting counseled by her, but like them just having conversations where it might sway his opinion about certain things or whatever, but it's just like she vanishes after that sex scene. She vanishes. I mean, well, she's like,
and the only time like Ptolemy refers to her in the narration is just like, and like Alexander didn't really go to her room much anymore because she didn't produce an heir.
Yeah, I did love my last sort of positive note that I have is during the lead up to the when Philip's about to get killed, when he's about to get assassinated in the tiny amphitheater thing, and
pre-Coliseum days, you know,
right? And Colin Farrell is with him, and they're like looking down that tunnel, and he says, "I got to go in alone." Then they tell you, like, "I'm, you know, like I'm the man. You don't go in with me. Fuck you, kid." You know, and then like and then he's like, "Father, perhaps I should," because he sees the assassin walking, and then it cuts to Philip, and he looks down there, and the assassin just moves out of view, and he sees Angelina Jolie, and so he totally reads it wrong. He's like, "Oh, she told you to do this. Fuck you." You know, I thought that was really good and really smart. I like that a lot.
That scene was good because Val Kilmer is good.
Yeah, he is good.
He's a goddamn hero.
Apparently, he wanted Liam Neeson to play Philip, and he passed.
Good.
Yeah. Good.
I don't know. Like, you know, it's weird to call Philip like fun because he's like an awful person, and we literally like see him prepping to rape a boy in that. Mm-hmm. But he does seem like he's one of the only Val Kilmer's like one of the only people who looks like he's like having fun at this movie, and maybe that's just like totally wrong for what Oliver Stone wanted this movie to be, and maybe that's why he stands out. But I'm hip to it.
I was fine with it. Yeah,
fun, Val Kilmer.
I liked his performance. I thought, you know, he's certainly more interesting than a lot of the other performances. I mean, even like you've got like some like really heavy hitter actors in here, and they're all just sort of like Anthony Hopkins is doing nothing in this movie. Like his narration is just him. It is one of his voice, and at the end, this like 25 fucking minute scene of him wandering around narrating still. And I'm just like, do we need to know what happened 20 years after Alexander died? I don't care.
No.
Let's end this thing already, you know?
Yeah. I have to say, as long as this movie has been around up until I started watching it, I would have told you that he played Aristotle. I was wrong.
I want to say I thought that too, actually going into it again, but
yeah.
I mean, you could have easily just replaced him with Christopher Plummer and have Christopher Plummer play Ptolemy. It would have been the exact same movie. Like, I don't, you know.
Did Christopher Plummer get like two scenes? Am I?
Yeah, he has two scenes.
He has a scene where he writes to him and he like narrates the letter. He tells him, he advises against him going into India, I think, or something.
Because that's another callback. He's like, you know, don't try to go too far. You know, Asia has this lure that draws men in and destroys them.
Right. Those Asian barbarians. Speaking again of the cliches and the dialogue and like how most of them are Angelina Jolie's lines, when he confronts her about having plotted to kill Philip, which she essentially admits to. And then she says, in the same breath, she says, "What have I done to make you hate me so?" It's like, what?
I don't know. Like, according to this movie, like everything, like every interaction you've ever had with your son,
it's just such a bad, like, you know, level one line for like an epic. Like, what have I done to make you hate me? It's like, you killed my father for one.
Well, yeah, and it's like, yeah, like, you. I get the point is like I made you king. Like, everything I've done has been to make you king. Well, it's like, you know, like I was gonna be like king anyway. You know, probably. Right. I mean, I know that he had that new pregnant concubine, but like,
yeah. Well, that was the whole thing. Like in real life, you know, like they did, like he did get into a spat with Philip, and you know, got banished for a little while. But then, you know, like they talked and they were, and you know, it was like, he never was going to replace him as his heir, like, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, sorry, go ahead.
Always dumb.
I was going to say, a nitpick of mine, which, I don't know, the more I think about it, it's like, bugs me even more. On all the maps, the font that they use for the countries, it's so 1940s, 50s, sword and sandal epic. Like, why isn't any of this written in, like, at least, you know, some approximation of ancient Greek or ancient Macedonian or whatever? Like, you know, it's like when Avatar came out and everyone was like, why are you using papyrus as your font? It's like, that's how I feel looking at this. It's like, y'all really couldn't have done any better with your maps, like, after all the effort you, like, but even that, you know, it just keeps going back to my original thing. Like, there's so much that could have been great about this movie, but, like, they don't focus on anything to give it the real final push to make it good.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, I mean, that's like a pretty, seems like a pretty quick, let's do a little bit of research. Let's do 5 minutes of research.
Yeah.
And write out the names in ancient Greek, yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
I will say, though, on the opposite end of that, the production values in general, I think, are pretty, pretty good and pretty massive. And, like, you know, I mean, I don't know how accurate things are, but like, just like the cavalry charge in that first battle looks incredible, and it's, you know, feels big. The situations feel large, even though, like, when they get to Babylon, it feels like they're on a set to me, but it also feels like a gigantic fucking set. So, you know, I think, you know, the movie definitely feels big and epic and everything, like it's, you know, obviously supposed to.
Yeah. I mean, this was an expensive film, right?
150 mil.
And it made like 140, I want to say?
No, it made 167.
Oh, okay.
But it's still a flop. That's considered a flop.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I mean,
they probably spent $100 million on marketing, so.
They really made your budget back. That was not good.
I did like the also the montage of when they actually enter India, and when they like meet, they see the monkeys and they're like these hairy men and like they don't know what they're looking at, and all that stuff was interesting to me. I thought that was not bad. And there's a big sort of anachronism in here. The quote that the film starts with by Virgil: "Fortune favors the bold." And
Virgil's a Roman author, right?
Yeah, dude. Like, literally hundreds of years later. And Alexander says fortune favors the bold as he enters Persia. So, like, that doesn't make any sense.
You know, Oliver Stone just thinks all Americans are dumb, so.
I guess so. I mean, that's a weird one for me. Like,
I didn't catch it.
Well, I mean.
I would
brought it up, and I'm like, oh, yeah, bro.
I wouldn't have known it immediately, but I was like, I'm going to look this up And I looked it up, and I'm like, oh, yeah, Virgil was around, like, literally, I don't even know. It's later in the...
Because he's Roman. He's like a...
Later in life.
He wrote the Aeneid, which is like the fake, you know, that's like the mythological founding of Rome and stuff.
70 BC. Yeah, so like literally like 300 years. So way different.
Huh. Wow.
Anyway, the film suffers too many relationships, too much going on, too many threads. Definitely some miscasting. I don't know if I'm ready to say Colin Farrell was miscast, but I think the movie just could have. I think it could be tightened up, maybe with working on the script or re-editing it.
He turned it around. He found his way. He had to suffer through garbage like Benches of Inisherin so that he could get into a fat suit and play the Penguin for entertainment.
Yeah,
he's definitely come a long way since this film, for sure. Critically, especially, I think, and just in terms of like, I remember him always being like when he was young, he was always like dangerous playboy bad boy kind of guy, you know. And now he's everybody loves him. He's just like one of the most liked guys, I feel like, in Hollywood.
Yeah.
So, and I'm happy for him, you know? Guy's a good actor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right,
Penguin is so good.
What are you guys giving this out of 5 stars?
2.5.
2.
I'm going 2.5 also. All right.
Oliver Stone still sucks.
Oliver Stone is an erstwhile great filmmaker.
Oliver, I don't know. Like, for me, Oliver Stone is one of those quintessential, like, I'm not 14 anymore. I'm not 16 anymore. No, come on. Like,
so cynical. I don't know. I still, like, for me.
Did you hit a guitar?
No, I just... Oh, did I? Yeah. Born on the 4th of July and Platoon and Talk Radio and all these movies like this, I still really appreciate and like. And basically anything that Robert Richardson shot, I'm into. So.
I don't know. I was super into his stuff when I was, like 13, 14, 15. But Platoon is good. Born on the 4th of July is good. Talk Radio is good. But I honestly can't call any of his stuff great anymore.
That's okay. You know, that's just like, I would say like, okay, when I'm 15 years old, I think Tarantino is amazing. He's one of the best filmmakers alive. And now it's like, I don't feel that way anymore, but I still think some of his movies are masterpieces and like really fucking good, you know?
Well, I feel the same way about like Pulp Fiction and Fight Club. And some... I'm sure some others.
That they're not great? You're saying Pulp Fiction is not a great film?
It's a 4 out of 5.
Okay. Hey.
It's good. it's very good, but like...
What's his 5 out of 5? Does he have one?
Tarantino?
Yeah.
Jackie Brown?
Okay.
Django Unchained?
Well, your head's on straight then. I mean, except for Django, but... Jackie Brown.
Inglourious Bastards?
Yeah, that's not bad.
Mm.
Yeah.
I still have all kinds of holes in my Oliver Stone viewing that I'll maybe never fill. Like, I've not seen Nixon or U-Turn. Do I need to see those? Wow. Some would say that I do. I don't know that I do.
Nixon's good.
If you gave us another 3.5 hour Oliver Stone deep dive in the next 2 months, I would.
It's only 3 hours and 12 minutes. You'll be fine.
But yeah, I
would not recommend U-Turn.
I really liked JFK when I saw it in high school, and it's one of my best friend's like absolute like favorite movies. Like, he loves it, swears by it, and you know, I want to like something that he loves, and I liked it then. You know, I would hope that I like it now. Why does everything have to be above 3 hours? Oh, God.
I like The Doors. I like stupid shit he's done. I think.
Well, I never saw like, The Doors. Yeah,
you never saw The Doors?
No, and I do want to see it because of my hero.
Tom McLaughlin?
Kyle McLaughlin. Frank Whaley?
Kevin Dillon?
I think Doors is the only thing I've seen everything up through JFK besides the Doors.
All right, I'm going to add it to my deep dive list.
And sorry, the hand, I don't know what The Hand is.
Yeah, I haven't seen The Hand or...
I take it back. I've seen everything from Salvador through Born on the 4th of July. And then it's Spotty.
Yeah.
Okay, I have not seen Wall Street Money Never Sleeps.
Yeah.
Or World Trade Center or U-Turn.
I never saw all of Heaven and Earth. I saw clips of it.
It's okay.
Didn't see The Hand, didn't see whatever the movie was that he made in, like, the 70s. Like, he made something in, like, the mid-70s. Seizure, that's it.
Yeah. I didn't see this either.
Yeah, and then he went through, like, Midnight Express and, like, Scarface, and then he started doing, you know, like, Salvador, Platoon.
Yeah, he got political.
You know, all the Nam stuff, and then, you know, Doors, JFK, up through the 90s, and...
I've seen go ahead.
Aside from Alexander, I think the most recent movie of his I've seen is Any Given Sunday, which I remember not liking for whatever reason.
I think that's
really stupid.
I don't think there's a movie after Alexander that is worth seeing, frankly.
And I haven't seen it. Like, I didn't see Trade Center or W or Savages.
I saw W in the theater. W is... atrocious.
Snowden. Yeah.
Snowden is one of the worst movies ever made, but W is pretty bad too.
And you know, it's like he's got all these political documentaries, and you know, I have no idea if those are good or not.
But I've seen a few of them. The ones he does with Fidel Castro are good, and South of the Border is good.
Okay.
With Hugo Chavez, it's really interesting. I mean, they're all super like dated now because you know all these people are dead and the world has changed, but. Anyway, that's enough about Oliver Stone for today.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, apparently Brian Blessed is in Alexander.
Oh yeah, he's the wrestling instructor.
I didn't even notice him. Crazy. I had no idea, but he plays the ghost of Hamlet's father in Hamlet, the Branagh Hamlet. That's what I know him from.
Brian Blessed is delightful.
So let's do our. Okay, so I did... Oh, sorry. My bad. Let's go back. My mistake. Alexander. Okay. Letterboxd Roulette. Colin Farrell, Jolie, Kilmer, Leto, Reese Myers, and Hopkins. I think that's a pretty good...
It's crazy. Okay. He's fifth on the list.
I know, that is crazy. He's like fifth billed and he's barely in the movie. It feels like the guy who played young Ptolemy should be higher.
I had to go to the IMDb. I'm like control effing to like find him. Like where is he?
I know. I've never seen the guy before. Sorry. So I got to get a dice. We're going to roll and it is 3, which is Kilmer. Hey, JR Kilmer. That you can prove your devotion to this guy.
It's like this, he's probably the one I'm least likely to win.
I don't think so. I think you've got it in the bag. Just looking at his filmography, I can already see like half a dozen things that you've probably seen that I haven't.
Mm.
All right. I've got 30 Kilmers.
22.
I got 21, bitches.
Oh, what? I beat you with Kilmer? Are you kidding me?
You both beat me. I came in last place with Kilmer.
I can't believe I have so many Kilmers. What have I seen that you guys haven't seen?
I'm such a fucking poser.
You guys haven't seen Prince of Egypt?
I have.
I saw it in the theater.
Me
too. I mean, I've not seen The Snowman. I didn't see Val.
Didn't watch Saint? Top Secret.
I saw you haven't seen The Saint?
Top Secret.
Yeah, I've seen the Doors. Comedies, you know.
I've seen Top Secret.
The Saint was like a huge one for me when I was younger.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. There's just tons I haven't seen. I mean, I could mark The Spoils of Babylon. Watch, I've seen that. His miniseries that he's in.
Island of Dr. Moreau?
No. No.
Red Planet? You're fucked.
I have seen Red Planet, yeah.
Oh, you don't have it marked?
What? I think it... Where is it? I'm pretty sure I do have it marked.
You do not. You have not watched it. Red Planet.
I can't even find it.
It's the one that's got his face on it.
Oh, yeah.
Carrie Ann Moss, Tom Sizemore.
Yeah.
Who is he in Missing?
This is one I sought out.
Oh, he's one of the generals.
Whatever.
Yeah, he's so terrible. He's
bad. So if I mark Red Planet, I've seen the same amount as Kevin, but I won't do that because I lost.
You can mark it, but you still lost. Because it's your job to keep your shit up to date.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well then, have you watched the recut of Twixt yet?
No, didn't you ask me about this last episode?
I asked you about it like a month and a half ago. I thought you got to it by now. You love Val Kilmer. I don't know.
I love Val Kilmer and I love Twixt.
Get on it, bud. Get
I watch like five movies a month right now. It's not good.
Yeah, I know. I'm the same way, dude. I didn't watch anything for like 15 days this month. The original movie it landed on was American Honey. I'm guessing you don't want to watch that because it's 3 hours.
I don't. And I've seen it. I don't want to do that.
3240. So the next, let's see. One. Oops. It'd be 33. So, sorry. I might have to edit this out, but 32. 46 is okay. You're probably not gonna want to do this one. You do like this one, Day of the Outlaw. You want to do that one again?
I love that movie. It's a bummer because there's no point in me watching it. Like, I love it already.
Yeah, I know.
You guys won't be watching it with me.
You're so, right. I mean, I've seen it.
It's like 80 minutes, but yeah, I'd rather do something else.
All right, hang on. Let's keep going. This is a lot of fun for our listeners. Okay, Jesus,
everybody.
Bro, this is brutal. Bram Stoker's Dracula?
God, didn't we have to watch that recently?
I mean, I know I watched it this year. I don't know. I'll do another one. Hang on.
I feel like that was homework. We've done that as homework before.
Really? I don't know about that.
We did Horrors of Dracula.
Yeah, you did the other day.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It's okay. It's okay. Okay. Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown?
I'll watch that.
JR has seen this. This is Almodovar.
It is, and it's one that is beloved that I didn't love, so I'm fine revisiting that.
It's only 88 minutes long.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Okay. Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown is the homework for next episode. I think I've only seen... Oh, I'm wrong. I've seen zero Almodovar films. I should probably watch this too. Yeah, I know. I've never seen any of this shit. I know, isn't it? I mean, I should watch some of this stuff. I do like Penelope Cruz, and I know she is in a lot of these, so. Okay.
Not this one, though.
No, but I mean, she's in a lot of them. You know, yeah. She's in Volver and Broken Embraces. So
well, Volver is good. Watch Volver.
JR, you want to start talking about that homework from last week?
Yeah, which is, you know, me doing homework in consecutive episodes. That's...
It appears as though the student has become the master. And I'm the man now.
Master has become the idiot. me. I'm now the idiot.
I understand. Sorry.
Okay. Oh yeah, so I was tasked with watching The Boy and the Beast, a 2015 anime directed by Mamoru Hosada, and as Kevin, reminded me last episode, or maybe it was we were talking after we ended last episode. This was directed our same director as an anime I enjoyed called Belle, and also an anime. That was very influential in my childhood called Digimon. Digimon the movie. You guys ever see that?
No, sir.
I remember watching the show, but I don't remember if I watched the movie.
It was a... I saw Digimon like on cable as a teenager, and I remember whose house I was at. So I was probably 14 and in 8th grade. And it was like... My memory of it is like this we were basically like stoned out of our minds, though we were 14 and, you know, consuming nothing more than Dr. Pepper and zebra cakes. But just like the way that we were laughing at the ridiculousness of this anime is very memorable. But anyway, this guy's come a long way since then. Bell's good. And The Boy and the Beast is also, I thought, pretty good. It is about this 9-year-old kid in Tokyo who has run away and is basically living on the streets. And he meets this cute little animal creature. Don't know what it is. No one ever explains what it is. But he, like, running away from the cops who are just going to, like, they notice he's a minor, like, walking around at night. Sort of slips into, we'll call it, like, a parallel world, imaginary world, where we've got these anthropomorphic animals. Like, everyone is just like a, you know, walking, talking animal. Like, our other main character is, you know, he's like a bear, and then there's a rabbit, and the bear fights a warthog, and, you know, like, and they're all people. And though there are no humans in this world, everyone there is aware of what humans are and what they look like. And that, like, they have shunned humans from that world because humans have a black hole inside of them. And we find out that that's literal. But this 9-year-old, like, gets involved with this this warrior, this bear, and becomes his apprentice. And they you know, they train each other, teach each other how to live. And there's a lot of lore with this world that shows up in, like, the intro of this movie that I, frankly, had a hard time following. People are battling to become Lord or something. I don't remember. This disgruntled bear warrior is constantly training to defeat this other warthog warrior. It made no sense to me, and it frankly did not matter. They are training together. That's what mattered. This was very much like a, I don't know. It had, I'm still from this Letterboxd review from someone. It's one of the popular ones on the page, but it's like there's definitely a bunch of Miyazaki here, like, with the cute animals and, like, just its playfulness. There's like Satoshi Kon, like, especially at the end with, like, the whale and the way that it gets very surreal. And, you know, it's wearing some influences on its sleeve, but it also is a it's, like, not super predictable where it's going at any given moment. And the way it kind of changes up what it's doing an hour into the movie, I appreciated. It's enjoyable. It's a nice little anime film.
I enjoyed it as well.
And, well, John just glazed over. Yeah, John was like,
sorry,
this is an anime film. I don't need to listen to this.
I do not care about anime. I talk to my kids all the time about it, man. They're always like, Miss Lewison, you like One Piece? I'm like, no, dude, I'm an adult. I don't watch cartoons, bud. Anyway.
Lame.
I'll tell you what I do watch is Extreme Justice, directed by Mark Lester from 1993. Which is a action thriller. I don't know what you'd call this. It's like a movie about corrupt cops in L.A., and it stars Lou Diamond Phillips and Scott Glenn. In
this poster is absurd.
What, like, the
fuck?
They're just running, dude. Relax. They're running after criminals. This is like one of the more poorly written and acted movies I've ever seen. It's weird because, like, I've seen Lou Diamond Phillips act well. I feel like not like super, like, he's not amazing, but he's competent, you know. And same with Scott Glenn. Like, I've seen Scott Glenn act, you know, competently. And you'd never know they could based on this movie. And Yaphet Kotto, too. He's horrible in this. Yeah, he's absolutely terrible. But, yeah, this movie's about, like, it's like essentially like that show The Shield. That's what yeah. It is, pretty much. It's, like, about this, like, group of the squad inside the LAPD whose job is to bust, like, really big, like, drug dealers and stuff, but instead of busting them and arresting them, they just decide they're going to kill everybody. So they like when they get them doing a crime, they wait till they're, like, really, like, in the middle of the crime and there's, like, no question, and then they go in, like, you know, in such a way as to antagonize them, to fire at them first, and then they kill everybody, you know, like death by cop sort of. And Lou Diamond Phillips is like the new kid. He's like the Ethan Hawke in Training Day, you know, and he, I don't know if I could do this, you know, that kind of thing. And it's just really bad. That's all I could say about it. It's just really, really bad. And even the action stuff isn't very good in it. There are a lot of, like, you know, people getting blown away and squibs and stuff, which is cool, but it's, other than that, it's pretty much trash. And like, Lou Diamond Phillips is dating a reporter, which makes no sense, and the reporter is like trying to report on the crimes that this squad is committing, but she knows that he's part of the squad. It's just, I don't know, it's weird. It's not, it's just very poorly executed and a bad movie. And I don't even know why I watched this. I have no idea why this came on my radar. I have no memory, but
were you like trying to watch Extreme Prejudice, like by Walter Hill?
No. I know that movie. The only thing I can think is that I had watched Showdown in Little Tokyo, the Brandon Lee, Dolph Lundgren movie, which is also by Mark Lester. And maybe I saw this on Mark Lester's page and was just like, hey, this might be okay. And it's just, it is not.
It's just like your friends recommend good things to you all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's leave it at that.
Are those things 90 minutes long, though? Not usually.
Some of them.
Are they action movie? Are they action movies starring Lou Diamond Phillips? Not usually.
Well, you got me there with a thing that you don't believe.
Yeah. Well, that's why I randomly quote that line from Schindler's List all the time. Like, how can you drink that motor oil? I send you good stuff all the time.
It's like, you know what? That's a good line to describe what it is, though. It's because, like, watching Extreme Justice takes so little effort for me. I don't need to be in any specific mood to watch Extreme Justice. It's just some, like, I know what it is going into it. I wasn't prepared for how bad it was going to be, but I knew that it was going to be like a trashy action movie from the early 90s. And it's like, there's no stakes. I'm not going into it being like, wow, you know, this is an important film by an important filmmaker. Like, it means nothing to me, you know what I mean? Whereas, like, yeah, I could be watching another Kurosami film or something, but it's like, I'm gonna go into a Kurosami film when I'm ready to go into a Kurosami fan, so I know that I'm giving it a fair shake. Otherwise, I might, you know, I might not like it because of the mood I'm in or whatever, and that's not fair to that film, which is, I have much more respect for than this pile of dog shit, so, you know.
Okay. Fair point.
Yeah, well said.
All right. Who's next? Kevin?
Kevin!
So, I finally got around to watching the other, X and Maxine, because I had seen, I had watched Pearl a while back, and both X and Maxine are pretty boring. And to quote Monty Python, irrepressibly drab and awful. Like, I don't know what it is with Ty West. Like, oh no, we can't have things happen before we get an hour into the movie. Like, everything has to happen at an hour and two. Like, like, give me a fucking break, man.
This is what people loved about that, like, Devil House movie. What was it called?
House of the Devil.
House of the Devil? Okay.
I liked House of the Devil. It's the only Ty West movie I really like.
I haven't seen it.
But it did take it was very interminable. It did take a long time for things to happen.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, and like you know, like I'll give Maxine, like, you guys have both seen it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. So spoilers for anyone who hasn't. The scene where they just straight up, like, lure Kevin Bacon out and then just crush him, no questions asked, like, good on you. You know? Like, you just killed the guy. Like, we don't need dumb exposition. We don't, you know, whatever.
I didn't see the exact way that happened coming.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, that's something.
Don't they show that crusher before that? At some point?
They do. I thought there'd be like a little.
Yeah.
I thought it'd be like more of a question that they're just like gonna fucking murder Kevin Bacon.
Yeah, yeah.
But then he's just gone. He's gone. He's crushed.
Yeah, like, you know, like, you know. Okay, well, you know, you answer some questions and, you know, like, yeah. Then like, oh, I don't know. And then like, it goes down a little further. All right. You know, that kind of thing. But no, just straight up, you know, you're dead. But like all of the stuff with Elizabeth Debicki, like, shut the fuck up, you pretentious hag. Well, and I'm not talking about Elizabeth Debicki as a person, but like, yes, her
relax,
character.
Relax, Jer, I'll get you.
No. That character of that pretentious director. Out of here.
Like, yeah, I'm with you. Like, Maxine is like, I think it's a lot different than X. Like, X is like very straightforward, and yeah, it's like, it's slow. Yeah. And I don't like it. I'm not defending it, but it is like a pretty simple like slasher.
Sure.
Whereas Maxine is like, there's all this stuff going on.
Yeah.
But there's nothing going on.
Yeah. It's like the worst. It's like, see, like when John talks about how he doesn't like, you know, specifically like 80s nostalgia, this is exactly what he's talking about. This absolute pastiche of the worst aspects of horror slasher films from the 80s, done incredibly poorly, but aspiring to apparently be, you know, as good as their sources, or, you know, like, especially with this, apparently trying to be more elevated. It's like,
yeah. His version of being elevated, again, is just like, it's complications. It's just like things on the fringes, and it's pointless. Yeah. Really, it's pointless.
Yeah. I think what's more frustrating to me about something like Maxine and the way that it tries to visualize what the 80s were like is that people just swallow it wholesale. Like, they're just like, yeah, this is awesome, because like, it's just like the 80s nostalgia thing isn't offensive to me in and of itself. It's offensive the way people react to it and how they just love it no matter what. It's just like, oh shit, set in the 80s, so fucking cool. To the point where like everything has to be set in the 80s and 90s now. It feels like all these like, yeah, this, it feels like it's happening a lot, you know.
And there are other reasons for that that I hear people talk about, like, people think that a lot of stuff happens or is set in the 90s because there wasn't widespread phone usage. So it's like a way for directors to avoid phones.
Yeah. It's,
And like, I get that. That's lame that we're, you know, some people are just like not looking to try to, you know, like utilize phones well, like my man, Taylor Sheridan.
Yeah,
he knows how to work a fucking phone.
Hell yeah, he does. Hell, right? Everybody in his show has four phones, you know?
Yeah. And some actors only ever interact on the phone in video. I am a full convert to two of his series.
Isn't that weird though that he's
not watching Yellowstone?
Okay, look. Not to get off of Sheridan, but like, Never mind. We'll talk about Sheridan. I want to talk about Lioness real quick, but later. But during my turn. Go ahead. Sorry, Kevin. Sorry to step on your turn, bud.
No. I'm like, yeah. Well, but both of these movies are incredibly overhyped. They're not good, and y'all need to branch out and really watch some movies.
I feel like that scene was less well received than Pearl. Mm.
Yeah,
and Pearl was better received than X. So maybe these were received. Maybe X and Maxine were received around the same, but you know, at least everyone's in agreement that Maxine is not nearly as good as Pearl, which is not incredible, but like, it's interesting, and Mia Goth is good.
Yeah, it at least has, you know, some character study and like.
Doggy.
Oh yeah.
I don't recognize that doggy.
What is happening? What?
Your dog is behind you.
Oh, sorry. I have a dog. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. That's
this is a cute doggy.
That's Juliet.
Sorry.
We've had her for a few months now.
Okay. So this is a new doggy.
Yeah. Relatively.
A few months
since the summer, pretty much.
Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah.
So.
She's very cute.
Oh, thank you. I made her. No, I'm just kidding. all right. JR?
All right. I'll talk. I'll get in the Gladiator. And I watched Gladiator because I do want to see Gladiator 2. And Gladiator is like a movie where, like, when I was 12 when this came out, I was like, this shit's lame. Like, I didn't see it when I was 12. But I was like, why would I ever go see this? Like, this is bullshit.
As a 12-year-old?
I do not know. I do not know.
This is like, this movie made me cream in my pants when I was 14, man.
There is a certain kind of, like, prestige action film that my father wanted to go see that I was like, fuck that, bro. I'm going
to
be
able to go to the Digimon movie, man.
Right side of history on this one. But no, and you know, then like I had in high school, I saw Gladiator. I liked it. College, I saw Gladiator again. And I was like, it's okay. And that's kind of just where I've been. Like, Gladiator's okay. This is like not at the top of Ridley Scott's filmography for me. I'm like, good action movie. Probably shouldn't have won Academy Awards. So, you know, time for a rewatch. And that's, like, that part's true. Like, this is a good action film that probably was, like, you know, like, now its reputation is weird because it won a bunch of Academy Awards that, like, what, you know, maybe it was the best movie of the year. I don't remember what it
Traffic beat. Came out that year.
No, I'd probably choose Traffic still. But the, I also get it. Like, I get why people liked this so much. And you know, when you're talking about, like, it's an action movie masquerading as prestige, like, I get that too. And I barely think it's masquerading. It's like, I think that Ridley Scott and whoever wrote this are like...
John Logan.
Thank you. It's like, I knew it was someone big. They're like not super interested in like all the political stuff to like keep the story moving. It's like the scheming is like so obvious out in the open and easily like caught by Commodus, that it's like almost just like we just have to like have them get caught by Commodus, and that's great because it keeps the story going, and it's a 2.5-hour film that I think it takes a long time to start in the sense that it takes a long time for us to get Maximus like in the gladiator ring, but it's not like that first hour is great. With the battle and then his family, and somehow he's taken as a slave and moved across an ocean without noticing before he wakes up. You know, I don't know how that works, but, you know, a sea, not an ocean, sorry. But there's just a lot going on. And this is like old school, like 1950s and 60s acting like Phoenix is literally like sniveling, right? Like, like he's not just sniveling in the sense that he's like a shitbag bad guy. Like, his facial expressions, like he's doing all sort of stuff like with his mouth whenever he's mad. It's like, it's so big. And then, you know, like, listening to like podcasts about Gladiator 2 and like all these people calling like Russell Crowe, like, you know, like that great like movie star performance, is like Russell Crowe doesn't have to do anything. Like, once his family dies, he's just silent. And like, he's great by just like being silent and not talking to anybody. And then like removing a mask. And it's like, it's good. It is effective. And he gets to like win an Oscar by just being like more understated than everyone around him.
It's really just that scene too that won the Oscar, right? Where he confronts Commodus and says, "I'm husband to a murdered wife, husband to a father to a murdered son." All that stuff. That's the scene. Like,
are you not entertained? I think that.
Yeah, maybe, but I don't know. Yeah. My name is Gladiator. Great line. You know,
it is a great line. Yeah. But I can't wait for you to tell me how they bring Jamon Hanzu back for Gladiator 2.
He's not.
No, seriously?
Yeah, seriously. Doesn't he die in the first one?
No, he's the one who like buries Maximus's body at the very end.
Oh yeah, he's not in Tartu.
Well, you know, good for them. And
that's
also,
that's not a good thing. He could have that probably would have been. I mean, they bring everybody else back. They might as well
like,
bring.
They made it like they sneak Jaman Anzu into like every like Marvel film somehow. Like he's in everything. So I'm amazed he didn't get on the phone and it's like Ridley, how are you bringing me back?
Please, Ridley.
What's Ridley's like? You can't like say like hello Ridley when you call him on the phone. You know him like what's his name?
Hey Rid.
Is it Rid?
I don't know. Ridley. It's just a weird, weird name. I'm sure he has like a. They probably call him like Papa or something. He probably has like a weird nickname or something because he's old now. You know.
Mm.
It's like someone who's not his friend instantly reveals himself by like the Riddler.
The Riddler. Yeah. Maybe he goes by Lee. Ridley, get it, Lee. Lee Scott.
Gladiator One. It's I'm gonna call it a 4-star film. It's a really good 4-star film.
Well, since you just talked about that, I'll talk about two. I'm inclined to agree based on the first 45 minutes that Gladiator is solid enough. Nothing masterful about it, but it's certainly good. Two. Okay, so like, if you thought that Joaquin Phoenix's performance was melodramatic and 50s-ish,
just it's very big.
Yeah, wait till you see Joseph Quinn and Fred Hechinger as the twin emperors in Gladiator 2, who are clearly on cocaine or something. They haven't. I don't know what. They're in a different movie than the rest of these people.
Were they doing that? Are they doing that Doom Prophecy cocaine?
No? Maybe.
I
didn't finish Doom Prophecy because it's awful. But it's bad. Yeah, I watched the first 10 or 15 minutes and I had to bail. But
oh, you didn't even get to the worst stuff. Okay.
It was plenty bad, brother. I was over it. It was not good. But anyways, no, it's like I don't know. This movie is just like it feels like it could have been a lot of fun and like an interesting, like, you know, just delve back into this world, and who's not into like an epic about Roman battles and shit like that. But it's just like, I don't know. Paul Mescal is lifeless. Like, I don't understand this guy's appeal. I kind of like him as just like a presence. Like, he looks good and everything, but he does nothing in this movie. I don't know who he is or what his character wants or anything. Like, it's just all mysterious. Like, he's got a very similar arc to Maximus in the first film. And there's a reveal later in the film that makes that make sense. But other than that, like, it's like his wife gets killed, not in a similar way, but she gets killed anyway, and he wants revenge for that. But it's like, you feel like after his wife gets killed and he sees her, like that's totally gone from his mind after that. Whereas I feel like in the first film, you know, his family dying affects him a great deal. No, right? I mean, like,
yes, it does.
It doesn't seem to have that same effect on this guy, and yet that's his impetus for doing everything he does in this movie, which is just very strange to me. And it feels like they're just sort of, by revealing his backstory later on, it pollutes all of that even further. And it's just a real, like, not a good story. Like, it's a bad story. It doesn't work as a story. And like, the twin emperors thing is horrible because of these two guys. These performances are so over the top and ridiculous. And the Hechinger actor, he's playing Emperor Caracalla. His is supposed to be funny, but the Joseph Quinn one is just like, you know, Caligula evil. And then like Pedro Pascal, who is, I would say he's underused, but I don't know that I've ever seen Pedro Pascal do anything impressive. So I can't say that he's being underused. He's just in the movie. It feels like he's just in it because he's having a moment now and they wanted to get a big name in there. And he's really not in it very much. And I don't know. He doesn't do anything interesting in it. It's really unfortunate. And they bring back Connie Nielsen from the first one for some reason. And she's awful in this. And she's had a lot of work done, which is really weird because it's like were in ancient Rome, but she's obviously had Botox and shit and like cheek enhancements and stuff. I'm just like, what is this?
So she's like 55, probably.
Yeah, she's definitely,
she's like not like that old, but
Born in 65, so she's actually almost 60. Should be 60 next year.
Okay, yeah, that's great. Mm. That was another thing in Gladiator. My memory is that like Connie Nielsen has always been old, but Connie Nielsen's like 34 when she filmed.
Remember thinking Connie Nielsen was so fucking good looking in Gladiator. I used to love her in that. Yeah, I mean, I know she was. I'm just saying, like,
she was a beauty for sure.
I loved her in that and The Hunted and Basic. She's just a beautiful lady back then. I will say that a lot of people are talking trash about Denzel in this movie because I guess, you know, because he chose not to have an English accent.
All my podcasts really like Denzel.
He's great. He's the only sort of redeeming quality in the film. The action sequences are like, they pale by comparison to the first one. And it's a lot of CG, a ton of CG, blood, ton of CG, animals.
And that's one of the things about making this movie now, right? Like,
right. Yes, it is.
Ridley Scott is like, his thing is like, he's going to make it quick and efficient. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's not like the Riddler is going to like go out of his way like to do the practical effects.
Right.
I don't know. Like the only moment I noticed like shit CGI in Gladiator was like the tigers.
Oliver Reed.
A couple tiger shots. See shit CGI?
Yeah, whenever he dies and they have to like mask his face onto some other actor, it looks like garbage. You didn't see that?
I thought there was just a lot of weird brown face going on anyway. But
I have to say I didn't notice.
I knew that he died in production, but I thought that they just like cut around.
I know. Noticed it last time I watched it. Okay. Now like, I didn't finish it this time. I probably will, but I you know.
You should and then let me know, because I wasn't paying enough attention. Because
it reminds me of at the time and around the same time as Gladiator came out in the show The Sopranos, his mother, the actress who plays his mother, Olivia, dies, and they have to CG her face in season two, and it looks brutal. Yeah. So it's just a lot of actors, old actors dying and. Being CG'd.
The what ends up being, we'll call it like the afterlife in Gladiator is obviously CG, but that's like forgivable because
is it? It's like the it's wheat not, fields and stuff.
No. Like specifically, it's like the very dark shot with the wall.
Oh yeah, that's CG.
Not the wheat field.
Wall is CG.
I don't know if the wall is. The sky behind it is certainly. Like the purple dark sky looks.
Yeah, but I never got that it was CG though. It's like the sky has been manipulated somehow, right? But it's not like created. It's not like created imagery, is it?
Because
that happens
at least
whenever he's going through, whenever he gets wounded during his execution attempt, and then after he gets picked up by the Jaiman Hansu, and they're like on the cart, and he's like hallucinating and stuff. Mm-hmm. That happens too. It shows like the rocky terrain and like the sky is purple and shit. But yeah. I always felt like it was just like a composite shot into like, you know, filters.
Maybe it
and
is. Stuff. I didn't like it.
Hey, well, I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm just, you know, anyways, Connie Nielsen's awful in this. Denzel is a lot of fun, but it's not enough, to make this watchable at 2.5 hours. And yeah, I agree. It's a product of the fact that it's being made now. If this was made in 2002, I think you'd have something maybe at least entertaining, which this movie is not. I feel like it's pretty fucking dull, actually.
Could Denzel have played the same part 22 years ago? Does he need to be like Denzel's current age?
No, not at all. I don't think so. Well, I mean, he has a backstory where he's like, he fought for Marcus Aurelius when he was a young man. So I guess like you'd have to change that somehow. Well, I guess he could have fought for him at that time.
I mean,
yeah,
like,
I don't know.
He was in his 50s 22 years ago, right? Isn't Denzel like 75?
I don't know about that. Is he 75? I thought he was like 70.
I just made up a number.
He's 69. 75 years old. He just did the Equalizer 3.
His old actors look so great.
Relax. I know, right? He doesn't look bad at all.
Five more Equalizers.
Yeah, totally. I think I would rather watch Equalizer than this again. I don't know.
I have not seen any of those. But
I haven't either, but it's got to be... At least the killing is fun in that, right?
They can't be as long, right? There's no way that those...
No, no way, right? This can't be. Anyway, well, that's this it.
And this is another... This is like also a currently Ridley... Excuse me. Ridley issue, like... And a current, like, Hollywood temple issue. Like, we just have to... These movies have to be so goddamn long. You know... Wicked came out the same day. It's 2 hours and 40 minutes long. It's part one, which is the same length as the stage show with the intermission.
It's part one?
Yeah, man. Next one comes out next Thanksgiving.
God in heaven. What is wrong with people? Who wants this?
Hey, I have not seen Wicked. I am... Like, I enjoy that stage show, and I will see this movie eventually. But and also directed by another one of my heroes, John Chu. Step up to the sheep, John Chu. And I will be watching this film, but it is offensive to me that this 2 hour and 20 minute story on stage is going to be 5 hours of movie. That's crazy.
Gotta do what you gotta do. Equalizer 1 is the longest one, and it's 2 hours and 12 minutes.
Well, and that's way too long for
Equalizer 3 is only an hour 40. So, like,
you have number one, you have not earned that length.
I know, right? Anyway, I'm really proud of the just a small aside on the Denzel Washington filmography on Letterboxd. I'm really proud of the films I have not seen of his. I feel like they're all ones that I should avoid. So.
Glory.
No, I've seen Glory. It's like Equalizer, all the Equalizer films, Magnificent Seven remake, Deja Vu. Like, these are movies I don't want to see. So it's good. Remember the Titans.
You know who's in Deja Vu?
Oh, Kilmer. You love Kilmer.
Filmed in New Orleans. There's all sorts of geography issues in there.
Disgusting.
Deja Vu is like, Deja Vu is not good. I dislike it. It is fucking wild.
I've like heard
the premise of the film. It is bonkers.
They talked about it on Film Junk when they reviewed every Tony Scott movie right after he died.
Well, I'm sorry for them. That's not. It's not super fun.
Tony Scott was a big deal for them when he was alive.
I know. Tony Scott is a big deal for a lot of people, and I'm happy for the people that are happy watching Tony Scott films. But I will never be happy watching Domino.
Just Domino is brutal. All right, Kevin. Are we Kevin? Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Real quick. So I watched music by John Williams, the documentary about him on Disney, and you know it's decent. It just made me want to watch. There are like a number of Spielberg movies that I'm like, well, I just got to go back and rewatch these now. Like, I need to rewatch, like, Schindler's List, E.T., Munich, you know, a bunch. So
there's a new Munich film about the Munich terrorists.
September 5th.
Yeah, the trailer played before Gladiator 2.
Oh, okay.
It's so, got Peter Sarsgaard in it.
Ooh. Okay.
So Oscar and John Magaro, right?
Yes, John Magaro also
is currently an Oscar hopeful.
Magaro is?
No. The film in general.
Yeah.
Magaro will never be nominated. Let's get real.
I know. I agree with you on that.
All right.
Yeah. And I also watched Gallagher, the bookkeeper. I don't know why.
About the watermelon guy?
It was one of his comedy specials.
Oh, okay.
Because it was on Amazon Prime.
Cool.
Like, I remembered seeing, like, a couple of them, like, when I was a kid, like, on Comedy Central. And, like, I remember thinking, like, I was really close to texting you guys and being like, I got more enjoyment out of a Gallagher special than I did with X.
I think Gallagher's probably kind of funny, right? Is it funny?
I thought so. I mean, you know, it's like, you know, 80s kind of dumb humor, but like, there's plenty of stuff that I was laughing at, so. And, you know, he.
Cool.
And I was like, you know, obviously he smashes, you know, a bunch of stuff at the end and he's spraying the audience. But, like, he's got this one thing where he's, like, you know, trying to, like, it's about, like, an elephant climbing. And, like, he's got, like, this ladder and, like, the rungs will, like, bend at a certain, you know, in sequence. And then, like a diving board will, like, wobble and then, like, you know, big explosion in this little pool. It's like, yeah, it's certainly a lot better than a lot of these other people are trying to do, you know? So.
Sounds good. It's on Prime, you said?
Yeah, he's got a bunch of his specials are on Prime right now.
I might check it out. I remember seeing his stuff when I was a kid and thinking it was good, but
yeah,
it's been a long time. All right, JR?
Yeah, I did Twisters whenever it hit Peacock.
Yikes.
Yeah, you know, I'm not going to recommend it. It's not good. It is, like, it's probably exactly what you think it is, you know, in terms of it's like that, the Lego sequel that is, like, remaking the film has a tie or two to the old one. And, you know, I watched Twisters earlier this year, earlier this year, and was like, you know, I don't know, this is fine. It's like, it's such like a weirdly tame, like, action disaster movie. And I guess, like, Twisters kind of ups the stakes, and there's a lot more death. But, you know, it also looks like you would think it looks. It's digital and things look bad. These tornadoes look fake.
So, brutal. Brutal.
You know, it's like Glenn Powell has charisma. That's what the movie's working on.
Does he, though? Is it better or worse than the original?
I have it, like, probably just, like, a little bit better. As in terms of, like, a story, like, the first one's not good. Like, I don't think it's good.
I don't know that I can't defend the first one, but I certainly remember being very entertained by it as a young man.
Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah,
Philip Seymour Hoffman. Yeah, like, so this doesn't, like, have, like, food. You know, right, it doesn't have a meme for it.
Right.
But, yeah, I don't know.
This one doesn't have...
it's got the singer from TV on the Radio in it.
This one doesn't have that beautiful lady in it, though. What's her name? Fuck. Jamie Gertz.
Helen, just like Helen Hunt? What's going on?
Jamie Gertz, bud?
No, it doesn't have her. It does have...
Daisy Edgar Allan Poe.
Like, the... Fuck. I was just thinking of her name because you were talking about Paul Mescal, and he's in that TV show with this girl.
Daisy Edgar Jones?
Yeah, thank you.
I've never even heard of her.
God, what was that show called?
War of the Worlds?
No.
Cold
no.
Feet?
Normal People.
Normal People? Fresh?
No, Fresh was a film with...
Where the Crawdads Sing? Sorry.
No, that was also a film. Goddamn. A lot of book adaptations, though. The Daisy Edgar Jones is she's gorgeous, and
I guess
no, she is.
I don't really see it.
I mean, look, gorgeous is a reason, stretch, man. She's all right.
There is a reason that Paul Mescal and Daisy Edgar Jones have been getting jobs since Normal People, when they both got very naked and were. You know, they basically became everyone's, like, very unavailable
crush,
like, emotionally unavailable crush, which is what they are in that. I didn't see that show, but I read that book and I hated it because it's like, ugh. But apparently that show is a huge deal, and those two have just been milking it since then. I'm not saying she's good, but I'm saying she's attractive. And I'm not saying Glenn Powell's good, but he's attractive.
Yeah. I could see that. I could see what women find attractive about him, women and gay men.
And the TV on the radio singer is there. He shouts a couple things. So is the new Superman. That was weird.
The TV on the radio guy, I haven't seen him since Rachel getting married.
Yeah.
Where he sings the Neil Young song. Badass.
Such sure does.
Great moment in that movie.
Playing shows next year.
Who cares?
not me. I don't like them.
I don't either. I watched The Apprentice, which is the new film about Donald Trump and his coming of age as a real estate man in New York City.
Who plays Trump?
Sebastian Stan plays Trump.
Stars with Daisy Edgar Jones and Fresh.
Whatever you say, man. Sebastian Stan is the, isn't he like the Winter Soldier?
Yeah.
That's what I know him from.
you do not.
I do actually. No, that really is the thing that I know him from. He is the Winter Soldier in Captain America Winter Soldier, which was the last time I was mildly excited to see a Marvel film. He's also in Rachel Getting Married, apparently. It says it right here. This is weird.
I did not know that. Okay.
Yeah, it's really strange. Small world. He plays a young Trump in this from the 70s in through the 80s. And this is directed by Ali Abbasi, who did Holy Spider a couple of years ago, which I liked. Yeah. He also did The Border, which I never saw,
Yeah, I didn't see that one.
This movie is really good. I guess for some people it might be hard to like separate judge this movie in any sort of a objective way, being that it's about who it's about, and he's a very polarizing figure. I'm not a big fan of Trump as a human, realtor or president, but I think just as a character study, seeing how a person becomes like they are, I think this movie does it really well, and it's a really interesting take on it. And the whole, like, he's got a relationship with this lawyer, Roy Cohn, in the 70s, played by Jeremy Strong. And Jeremy Strong essentially forms him into the narcissistic sort of sociopath that he becomes. And it's an interesting... I guess I will say that like it wouldn't be as good or interesting if the performances weren't so strong. Like Sebastian Stan is really fucking good in this movie. I doubt seriously if he'll get noticed at Oscar time, only because he's playing Trump. But he's very good, very good, very good.
I'm not going to remember the name of the film, but he's in another film this year.
Oh, that, a different
That seems to be getting more attention.
Yeah,
He'd still be a long shot, but
this feels like the more. I haven't seen A Different Man. I do want to now that I've seen this, but this feels like the more showy performance for sure. Obviously, he's really good in this. I think his performance is carrying the movie a lot. Not that the movie's not well made; it's very well directed, and I like the what they're able to accomplish. Being that they can't possibly. Like Trump disavowed this movie and like threatened to sue the filmmakers and stuff. So, it's surprising the access that they get to some certain locations and things, in the film. It's good looking. I think it looks like it's shot on 16. I haven't actually looked into that, but it looks like it's shot on 16. And, Jeremy Strong, I would love to hear what you guys think of Jeremy Strong in this movie, because I'm not sure, like, if he's overdoing it or if it's really good. It's very entertaining what he's doing, but he's definitely like playing it people like the complaints about like Jamie Foxx and Ray, like how he's just doing an impression of Ray Charles essentially the entire movie. It's like you get the impression that, like, even though I've never actually seen Roy Cohn speak, it just feels like an impression, but it's very entertaining what he's doing, like all the little expressions he has and the way he's got the accent down and everything. I don't know. I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Like, did you watch Succession? I did not.
No, I don't. Succession is not something that interests me at all.
Same. I can't imagine ever watching it. So, like, I feel right. like that's most people's, like, reference point for Jeremy Strong.
Yeah, without a doubt. Yeah.
And I feel like mine... I know I've seen more films with him than this, but, like, he was in The Trial of Chicago 7, which is, like, a bad Aaron Sorkin film.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought he was not good in it. And the things that you read about Jeremy Strong are just, like... He's just, like, always doing so much.
Yeah.
He's, like, I don't know if meth... Is he doing method? I don't know. But
yeah,
he's doing
method. He lives as his character and, like, won't break character. And, like, I know there was a big thing between him and Brian Cox. Brian Cox was mad at him for being a method actor. And
so it's, like, it's the kind of thing where it's, like, when I see him after reading that stuff, I'm just going to think he's ridiculous because I know that he is ridiculous mm-hmm. as, like, a human. I don't know. I'm curious to watch it. I mean, I will be watching this.
I've seen a lot of films that he's in, but the only one that, besides this one, the only one that I can actually remember him in is Armageddon Time. And I remember not loving him in that. He plays the father in that.
Oh, okay. I forgot about that.
Yeah. But
like, I can't place him in Molly's Game.
Neither can I.
I can't place him in Zero Dark Thirty.
Or Black Mass. I don't know.
I know he was in Succession, but the only thing I can picture him in is The Gentleman.
Oh, okay.
Who is he in The Gentleman?
He's the dude who turns out to be the bad guy, I guess.
He's Matthew. Just kidding.
Like, he's the one that McConaughey tells him to get into the freezer because, was trying to take his business, but, you know, you laid hands on my wife.
Okay. All right. Yeah. And, like, again, I can't really even put a face to that. I know what you're talking about now, though.
Yeah. He's in Parkland as Lee Harvey Oswald, so.
Did not see that.
I have to check that one out. Mm. Not really. I'm never going to check that out, but. anyway, so I have to highly recommend The Apprentice. It's in my top three currently for the year. It's great. Great film. If nothing else, for Stan's performance alone, quite good. Quite good. Revelatory in that I had no idea Sebastian Stan could act outside of a Marvel movie.
You never saw, like, I, Tonya?
No. Nor will I. That's a hard no for me.
That's fine. I'm not recommending it. Okay.
Yeah. And I don't remember him and Rachel getting married. And apparently he was in The Martian. Don't remember that. He's in Black Swan. Don't remember that.
Nope.
Mm. But I do want to see now a different man because he's good. I gotta see it.
Yeah. I've just heard good things about that.
I have too. And I like this other guy, Adam Pearson, who's in it. He's in... Under the Skin. Yeah, I like to see if he can, you know, actually do something that's not just about his appearance, you know. Anyway, Kevin?
I'm out.
Alrighty.
My last one, I watched Deadpool and Wolverine.
You love this movie.
Because I hate myself, and I hate Sean Levy, and...
That's why you watch all of these
films. Not all of them. I've not seen all of them. I was not a huge fan of the first two Deadpool movies. You know, I thought they were fine. I thought each of them had a few parts where I laughed. But this was like, this is just like cynical, just like nostalgia garbage. And like, I knew that going in, but I was hoping that there would still be like just some funny parts, but it's not. Just the whole thing is gross. And I think I decided like Sean Levy and Ryan Reynolds just like desire to like only play with familiar images and characters and do like nothing new is just like truly disgusting to me. Like Free Guy was a really fucking bad movie. That is just like, it was so gross. And the way that it ended, which is like this montage of like Ryan Reynolds becoming like these different Marvel and Star Wars characters to defeat the video game bad guy, was like, it was gross and it was icky. And like the same kind of shit happens all over this Deadpool movie. And it just felt so gross. It's gross.
Did you chuckle at all or
no? And that was a bummer too. Like I don't know. Like it's not like that Ryan Reynolds is incapable of being funny. Like I think he can definitely be funny. And there are funny parts in those Deadpool films. But this was no, nothing was funny.
Did you? Oh, see, oh wow! I laughed a few times, which is why.
What'd you laugh at?
I thought the
what is your shitty sense of humor laugh at?
I thought certain aspects of the whatever the thing is, the void or whatever they're in, like the trash thing where all the bad characters go. I will say that on a very primal sort of turn my brain off level, like Chris Evans being there but not being Captain America, I thought was amusing. And when he does the flame on thing and everything, and I liked when the other characters showed up, like the Gambit Electra thing. Gambit thing is like, I agree with all criticism I've heard of it. It is retarded, but it's like it was funny in the moment. I don't know. I laughed in that moment.
I like Channing Tatum. I like Gambit. I wanted that to be funny. I just like. Yeah. I did not laugh at it.
I
can't.
I'm not going to defend this movie. I can't.
And like, but you know, like the whole like the void was introduced in Loki season one, in with like the same exact context, and like, it, you know, so like that thing that like eats these characters is like a that's like a villain in Loki.
So, like in Loki like, season one, they have old characters from other movies.
No, so the context there is like it's all the these multiversal Lokis that are in there, with that same like giant storm wolf thing doing the same, or monster doing the same shit. It was like so like these jokes were in Loki, with like old comic versions of Loki that don't exist anymore. It's like we're doing the same shit. Like Deadpool's pulling from what most people think was like a just fine Marvel TV show for a bunch of these jokes. Plus your, you know, what your knowledge of early 2000s Marvel misfires, whatever.
Sure.
It's like if I had not seen Loki, would that have been funnier? Probably not. But just like it's even worse that they're pulling from Loki for some reason.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any of that context going into it, so maybe that helps. But I don't know, just like little things here and there. And I saw it with friends. You know, you see it with friends, people laugh, so you laugh with them. You know, I don't know.
It's just me on my couch.
Yeah, I'm not a miserable fuck like you. You know, I try to have fun with movies and.
sure.
Well, just wrapping it up here, real quick, Lioness Season 2 is a real stunner so far, and I'm loving every second of it. In particular, that first episode where they have to go into Mexico to rescue a kidnapped congresswoman. Just really great.
Goddamn.
Tactical.
The way that they take out that family.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's intense.
I mentioned I wanted to watch Linus. I watched Linus. The Amazon Prime Paramount app, when you like click on a show, doesn't necessarily default you to the beginning of that show.
So stupid.
So just like I'm watching episode 1 of season 2 without realizing it, and yeah. I'm like, this is goddamn brutal. What the fuck is going on? I don't know who anybody is. It's like, what is this history with this guy Kyle? I have no clue.
That's good, yeah.
And like it was disorienting, but also like it made me like it more, and then make me like season 1 less. But
that's fair. I think season 1 is a lot slower getting to where it's going than season 2 is, which is why I like season 2 better. But how did you feel about? Did you realize Taylor Sheridan is the leader of the crew at the beginning of that's episodes 1 and 2? Cody Spears?
No,
he's the guy driving the car. Like, who's
that's
like,
why he disappears.
Yeah,
that's exactly. Why he's not. Okay,
right.
I did not realize that because I was looking for him in like the opening credits. I was like, oh, that's weird. This guy is like he's like the most memorable part outside of Zoe in these episodes.
Yeah. He's good. He's not in the first season at all, right? I don't think he is. Yeah, but I liked seeing him. It was cool. He started out as an actor before he started writing. But yeah, I don't know. I just really enjoy. I'm enjoying it a lot, and all the sort of behind the scenes political shit with where they like Nicole Kidman has to go to restaurants and have dinner with senators and stuff to talk them into voting certain ways. And,
oh my god, that stuff is awesome.
Yeah,
and like. Like tricking Martin Donovan. Like Martin Donovan thinks it's date night.
Right. It's, yeah.
But he knows as soon as he hears what restaurant they're going to.
Yeah.
He's great. More Martin Donovan, please.
Yeah, he's really good. I just like how like subtle his sort of like advice to her is.
Yeah.
He's not demonstrative at all. He's just like, yeah, check out the Wall Street Journal later. You know, like think about this. Think about the oil prices and
It's like you didn't want to tell me you were running an operation and blah blah blah. You didn't think that would affect me,
right?
But so what I'm finding out about Taylor Sheridan with the two shows that I've started from him is like he can make television about stuff that I find so like politically disgusting. Like I hate everything about Linus. Like.
Mm-hmm.
Everything it stands for is stuff that I hate. And he can have characters in the shows that are like so on like a different side of the political aisle than I am. But I never feel like Taylor Sheridan necessarily believes like the politics of his characters. It's like he's just like creating a show about a job that that's fucked up.
I feel like he's trying to illustrate, and I don't know if that I would hate to speculate on what his personal views are politically.
I have no idea what they are.
I mean I could speculate, but I feel like his characters are like above the politics. Like they think they're like we're on the front lines, the politics don't even matter, you know, nothing matters because we're going in to do the thing that we've been told we need to do, and it's to protect the greater good, and neither side of the aisle understands what it takes to protect the greater good. You know, we have to to murder people sometimes, and you have to kill police officers and innocent people, and it's, you know.
It's rough. And, but, you know, and like, Zoe is very much, like, when she needs to convince someone of something, she's going to, like, use patriotism against them, right?
Right.
Do you love like all this like you love your country shit, and it's like Zoe realizes or Zoe's character realizes like that's a weapon for just like these grunts in the military. I'm like fuck, dude.
She does. I'll say the only negative I have about Saldana and her performance, just a lot of screaming, man. Like she just needs to. She could be a little bit more nuanced. She is screaming a lot.
Yeah. Like I feel like the first time she screams, no, it wasn't the first time. I think it's like the second episode with the fight in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Carrillo starts yelling at her.
Kidman calls her Carrillo. Everybody else says Carrillo.
Yeah. when like she gets out the helicopter and is yelling at Zoe, and like yeah. Zoe freaks out and like starts like, I am the highest ranking officer here. Like I did not hate that scene.
I didn't mind that.
Because everyone is like freaking out. Like she's yeah. freaking out. No one expected to be in that gunfight.
And she didn't know who she was talking to, which is like an interesting dynamic. But it's just some of the other, I just feel like she's yelling like every other scene. She's screaming at somebody.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, calm down. Yeah. Like,
yeah, it's like they brought the first Linus back to like speak with Korea with like a level head. Zoe can't not yell.
At the right. Exactly. Right.
So we have to bring someone else in to talk normal to her.
And also I could do without the, I like the family stuff as far as like her and her husband. You could jettison all the daughter shit. I could give a fuck.
Good. I mean, there's less daughter shit this season than last season.
That's true. But like when she walked in on them having sex, it's like there's like a 5-minute scene of her explaining that they love each other. I'm just like, I don't need this. Like, who cares?
I think we found out in like episode 5, like the dude that got the daughter pregnant is like still the boyfriend. I was like, that's crazy. They were like, talking about having dinner with this kid that got her pregnant.
That's wild.
And I was like, I don't know if I found out that girl's father was just like translating neurosurgeon or whatever, and
yeah, mother was in the military. Too,
I think I would not be.
It's weird because
just like that one conversation.
The doctor guy has the transphobic comments, and then later on, which I wouldn't have expected, you know, because he's like a learned doctor, and then. Later on, Carrillo's, you know, drug laundering dad, he also says something negative about trans people. And I'm like, I get it from that guy. That guy makes sense. Like, yeah. He's old school Mexican.
Well, but that's, you know, he told you it's like, we're playing to a base here, right?
Sure.
There's an audience that we expect to be watching the Sheridan shows. And there's some of that stuff in Landman, too. Landman with Billy Bob Thornton, which is a very fascinating show, and I don't know if it's good. It's fucking crazy. But this like sort of like young female lawyer shows up in the second episode, and they make it a point to very quickly have a conversation about gender, and I was like, oh god, we did not need this. That show is wild though, and it is also like another show that's like, you know, politically gross, and but I don't necessarily feel like Taylor Sheridan agrees with the politics of his characters.
You're just like, you so don't want to think that he does.
No, but it's fascinating because like I was even like looking, I was on Tagger Droppings yelling at people about something, and there was like this person started this like oil thread talking about how oil is going to run out, and someone like posted a response that was like this speech that Billy Bob Thornton gives in Landman about like how much oil like we use in everything, and like it was like this Twitter video. It was like, show this to your liberal friends. And Billy Bob Thornton, like, shouting about how oil's and everything. But it's like, so no one that watched that got to the end of that speech where Billy Bob Thornton is like, and the kicker is, we're fucking running out of it. And we don't have a replacement yet. So it's like, oh, so like, this isn't, like, the conservative ideal of the oil industry. It's just, like, it's very pragmatic. We use it. We have to like get it out of the ground. It's gross and people die. Yeah. And then we have like a 28-year-old starring as a 17-year-old and men ogling her very openly. That part's weird.
As long as she's not actually 17, it's okay.
She's not 17. And the show seems to know that she's not 17. It's bizarre.
Were they showing her naked and stuff?
Close to. No, they show Allie Larder is naked.
Allie Larder is in the show?
Allie Larder is in the show. In the first 2 episodes, she only appears on Zoom. And I was like, how many people in this show only appear on the phone, because John Hamm also so far only on the phone.
That's so weird.
We see John Hamm getting up from multiple like things he's sitting at, and we see him walking to a quiet place, wherever building he's in, to talk on the phone to Billy Bob Thornton. It's magnificent. His phone conversations are great.
It probably is how he's able to get all these big names. He's just like, oh, you're just scenes on the phone, man. Just take you a couple hours to shoot it.
One day. Yeah. On the phone.
All right. Well, it's JR's pick for next episode.
Speaking of Demi Moore.
What?
When were we?
Oh, she's a Landman. Sometimes when John Hamm answers the phone when he's at his house, Demi Moore is swimming laps in their pool. She's had like one line in three episodes.
What? That's bizarre.
So tell me if you guys watched this already. But I want to do The Substance.
I have not watched it yet.
I have not watched it.
Then we're doing The Substance.
Okay. I should watch this. Okay.
You will watch this.
I know, I have to now. I probably would not have if you hadn't made the deep dive. But maybe I'll thank you, because everything I hear about it is really positive. So,
what makes you not want to watch The Substance?
The
fact that everything you hear is positive?
No, it just looks derivative of, like, you know, like, French surrealist shit that you see now, like Titan, or like, and like bad imitations of Cronenberg. I don't know. Like, I didn't see it, so it might be amazing, but it just doesn't do anything for me.
Let's all find out together.
Yeah, sure. I'm into it. It's only 2.5 hours long. Thanks. We just did a 3.5 hour epic. Now we got to do a 2.5 hour.
Okay. Oh, sorry. Yeah. You're the only one allowed to punish us. Okay.
that's correct. Have you seen this director's other film, Love Revenge? You have.
I think he did.
Yeah, like the girl on the.
Yeah.
She's being hunted, right? Or is this one on the boat?
No, the where she's being hunted. You're correct.
Okay.
In like the desert or whatever.
Yeah.
I never saw it. Maybe I'll check that out too. I don't know. All right, cool. Well, we'll watch for next time The Substance, directed by Coralie Farget.
We'll work on that.
All right. Until then, thanks for listening. Check out our website, filmyakpodcast.com, and remember to, I don't know. You say like and subscribe. I don't know what you say. The things where you get the podcasts, you know, follow us, subscribe to our podcast, write to us at filmyakpodcast@gmail.com. And until next time, thank you so much for listening. Bye-bye.